There's another element to safety, and that is if you vaccinate someone and they make an antibody response and then they get exposed and infected, does the response that you induce actually enhance the infection and make it worse? And the only way you'll know that is if you do an extended study, not in a normal volunteer who has no risk of infection, but in people who are out there in a risk situation. This would not be the first time, if it happened, that a vaccine that looked good in initial safety actually made people worse.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Tuesday, December 14th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Have a shorter show planned for you today, an impromptu show, some really important stuff that came across my desk today that I think is absolutely imperative to get to you today and not wait until tomorrow. Important information around the Omicron variant conversation and what's actually driving this, as we have been telling you since the beginning, not an opinion, not an assumption based on the data that we were looking at. And now that's being admitted based on the same data that we were previously looking at, even though we've been censored for saying it this entire time. There's the other discussion about the vaccine passports and how many boosters are needed to make that fully vaccinated so the passport applies. And they said that was fake news, that it wasn't going to change. Now here we are. The UK is changing their definition. That's incredibly important. And now it's going to be fake news to suggest that the fourth shot is going to be changed. Oh, that's crazy nonsense. And right up until it becomes the next fourth shot, then the fifth shot's going to be conspiracy theory. It's an ongoing absurdity. But we also are going to talk about a very important conversation about informed consent. You just saw the opening clip. Dr. Fauci admitting that there's a concept about antibody-dependent enhancement. Not that that's a secret. This has obviously been out there. But specifically admitting that this is something that we don't know, that we won't know until we go further down the line. So you can, no matter how you feel about that or the risk of COVID or whatever else, all that amounts to is you should have a choice. If they don't know if this is going to cause your body to attack itself, and we're going to go over all the science that proves very clearly that that is a risk and they knew it was a risk and that they told you it was a risk and they didn't inform consent people, didn't inform people and get their consent. But this is something that they know about and it should be a choice. That if you know that your body might attack itself after taking something like this, that you should be able to say no or I'll wait. And they know this. That's the worst, most criminal part of all of it. They're well aware of that. Now, we're also going to talk about the most important part today, in my opinion, a study, a preprint study, but finding the very important, coming to the very important conclusion about T-cell immunity or T-cell escape in regard to natural immunity versus vaccination, but specifically in the context of really that the immunity you're getting from natural immunity is better, it's lasting, and it continues to apply to ongoing variants. And that they find in this article, without necessarily saying it, because as I point out, you're not allowed to say certain things, even in the scientific field, because you'll lose your funding, essentially saying and coming to the conclusion that your natural immunity is doing this, the injections are not. And it's about Omicron. And it's showing you that this is not working, that everything is failing in regard to Omicron from every possible angle. But they clearly find that T-cell immunity does continue. But it's interesting that that shows you that it's natural immunity. And I'll get into all of this, as I've done many times before, about what is actually leading to these things and what's not. Now, of course, we also have in a conversation to a couple extra points in regard to Joe Rogan's conversation with Dr. Peter McCullough, an interesting point about the injuries we're seeing, and to finish off with some ivermectin conversations because it ties into what Dr. McCullough was saying. But to start off, all the information we have, right? It's obvious that at the very least, they don't know if it's more severe, even though they do know that. And they just continue to say they don't know, just like they continue to this day to say, we don't know, Delta might be more dangerous. Okay, we've got plenty of data, months and months and months, year. This whole process, it's clear we can see it's not more dangerous. And I just read you scientific research, including documents coming from the authority figures telling you Delta is not more dangerous, but they still do that. The point in you selling you that now is to let you see that that's what's going to happen with Omicron the same way. It's not. It's super mild, according to the WHO. Only one person's been hospitalized, zero deaths. Clearly, it's not more dangerous. But they'll continue to go, it could be. Tomorrow, it could be more dangerous. So defined irrational fear is driving our science, right? So that's the idea, that they're pushing this, that it's super dangerous and it's always going to, the idea though is that they're not giving you the balanced information where they go, yes, it's spreading, but here, so they say anyway, so the data tells us, or their data tells us, but at the other side of this, it's like, if it's less severe, if it's super mild, shouldn't that be part of the conversation? Shouldn't you say, yes, it appears to be spreading everywhere, but don't worry because it appears to be especially mild? They won't do that because it doesn't work for the narrative. Or whether or not these people understand that's why they're not saying it or not, the talking head media out there, that is, in my opinion, definitely why this is being left out of the conversation. Omicron spreading at an unprecedented rate, probably in all countries, the WHO says. The WHO, who's already said that this is super mild and it's obviously not more dangerous. Now, the reason I'm showing you this article specifically, and it's all mainstream media, is because of the way that this leaves that part out. Yes, they did say this, but not to necessarily say the WHO is on anybody's side other than their own. But why would you leave that part out? Why would you leave out the part that's like, it's good news, guys, it's good news. It's not more dangerous, because they don't want you to know that. They don't want you to go, oh, good, it's not dangerous, because either that means then you're not going to get their injection, or it means that you're not scared of this like you're supposed to be. Whatever ultimately amounts to, they're hiding the truth from you or omitting facts because they don't like what those facts make you do or allow you to think for yourself. This is just hype. 50 all over the country, and then, you know, maybe, probably everywhere. So we guess at. Well, the other point is we have our mainstream individuals out there really aggressively pushing the fear based on nothing but hypotheticals. Here is Umar. I just published the next pandemic. It's on its way, and it's going to be much worse. Great. Based on what information? It's hypothetical. You can read this garbage for yourself, but check out really quickly all the other articles he's been putting out before this. Sorry, but COVID's not over back in December 8th. We've reached the limits of human civilization? Gee, I wonder where that's leaning into. Maybe the Great Reset, World Economic Forum. Inside Trump's plot to destroy American democracy. The next pandemic is on its way and it's going to be much worse. The next one he's already gotten out. Catastrophe is the new normal. Are we ready? This is fear mongering. And the point I'm showing you this is not to say that this is meaningful in any way other than it's just everywhere in the mainstream talking points, but to show you that this guy's got a huge following. 230,000 followers. This thing was posted on the 11th. That was 3 days ago. Look at the engagement. Now, that either shows you that this is fake followers, which I promise you all these people have. But on top of that, it shows you that the people that even follow him do not like him screaming, you're all going to die based on the unknown, because that's childish. That is not scientific. This is using hypotheticals. I mean, even the picture you're showing right there is talking about the mutations. Well, the mutations have already been shown to not be more dangerous. In fact, historically speaking, they tend to mutate this way and they become endemic and we no longer worry about them. But see, they've altered the entire understanding. They flip it on its ear. And now we're arguing that's the worst thing we can possibly see. Why? Because vaccine. That's why. This is fear-mongering hype that's going to keep you scared if you're following them along. Now, I want to very quickly point this out in the beginning of the show for people that might not have seen it. This is Pfizer information about their BioNTech Pfizer injection on Europa.eu, the European website as of September 24th. Just to start this off, I want you guys to recognize this documentation, which you can look at for yourself. Very clearly points out, here's the home bit, the front page, so you can see it. Very clearly points out community risk management, that they do not have information for any of these people that they're forcing to take this, or at least pressuring to take it, or suggesting or telling it's safe to take it. Very quickly, they don't have information about pregnancy or breastfeeding. The safety profile of the vaccine is not known in pregnant or breastfeeding women. Right now, they're telling them it's safe to take it. They even go as far as to say there may be pregnant women who choose to be vaccinated despite the lack of safety data. That's because they don't know about that. You're lying to them. Same point. Immunocompromised. The very group that they're telling should take it first. The vaccine has not been studied in individuals with overt immunocompromised conditions. How can you tell them to take this thing? Especially when most populations other than like over 65 are at less risk than the flu. Under 19, one in a million chance of dying, and you're telling them you don't know if this is safe? So here's an unknown safety profile because this thing we claim is dangerous, so take that. That's not science. That's not even medicine. That is absolute medical tyranny using propaganda. If you're immunocompromised out there, you need to understand they're citing here that they don't know if this is safe for you. Yet nonetheless, the media and the government are telling you you should and need to take it, have to take it in many cases. Frail people. We're talking elderly people with comorbidities. That is literally what this is discussing. Again, it says it has not been studied in frail individuals with severe comorbidities that may compromise immune function due to the condition or treatment of the condition. Meaning, they don't know if this is safe with elderly people with comorbidities. Wait a minute. What's the biggest population of grouping of people that has been suffering and dying from this? The elderly people with multiple comorbidities from the beginning to now. All New York, the New York nursing homes, it's still happening now. We're seeing that 94% of all COVID cases had at least three comorbidities. Well, there you go. They didn't research it. Therefore, they can say it's not dangerous. We don't know if it's dangerous. That's how this whole thing works. We don't know for sure. Ends up meaning whatever they want it to mean. They're telling you that you have to take this. They don't know if it's safe. Same thing over here. Use in patients with autoimmune inflammatory disorders. They say simply there's limited information. Limited. Are you okay with taking just limited information about whether or not this might kill you or make you go blind or make you die or make you have a heart attack? I mean, anything. The fact is, if they don't have full information, you don't know what it will do. What they do know it can do is stroke, heart attack, vaccine-induced vaccine-induced thrombosis, thrombocytopenia, Bell's palsy, random skin conditions, seizures. All of these have been admitted to. Then you add on that we don't know, have limited information specifically for this group on top of what we already know. But yeah, go ahead and take it. Force them to take it so they can play sports. Force them to take it so they can go to school. Force them to take it so they don't lose their job if they're an adult. But we don't know for sure. Interaction with other vaccines. I've told you this every single time. There is no data on interaction of COVID vaccines with other vaccines at this time. Nonetheless, they're forcing the flu shot alongside the COVID shot. Maybe I shouldn't say force for those that are a little too uncomfortable with that concept because I can't prove they're necessarily forcing the flu shot at this time. It's probably going to happen soon enough. But at the end of the day, they are telling children and adults alike, get the flu shot right after your COVID shot. They don't know if that's safe. That's right on their own documentation. This is no way to misunderstand this. This is not conspiracy theory. It is stated on European documents from September of Pfizer's information. And it still says that right this moment on the most up-to-date, as of December 9th, FDA document. It's incredible. Long-term safety data, most important part. They're telling you right now, at this time, as of September, what they have to tell you this is safe, they have 2 months post-dose two safety data. That's what they have. That's available for approximately only half of the patients who have received the injection. Oh, and by the way, the study is ongoing, despite the pleas and bleeding of the people on the Twitter sphere. It is still ongoing. They are still testing and studying on you. That's what it says right there. That's what their documentation says everywhere else if you just pay attention. At this time, they've got 2 month post-dose two safety data for only half of the people that have taken it. And that is enough to tell you it's super safe and everybody's good to go. Most important, at the time of vaccine availability, the long-term safety of COVID-19 mRNA vaccine is not fully known. That is absolute wild conspiracy theory anywhere other than Pfizer's own documentation. Isn't that hilarious? Isn't it macabre? It's just, it breaks my heart that we have to be in this position right now. But we're crazy because we dare to tell you the truth. Now, keeping that in mind, how absurd this all is, starting off with the conspiracy theory that you're going to have three jabs, and that's its own conspiracy theory. Then the other conspiracy theory that you're going to be required to have proof of three jabs to have the vaccine passport. Oh, the passport itself was a conspiracy theory. All these are three different conspiracy theories that are simultaneously happening right now, right in front of you. Breaking. Sajid Javid says vaccine passport will not be valid unless people have had two jabs and a booster. So three jabs. It's not a booster if it's required, rather than just two jabs. All of them are the same exact thing, which lead to the same exact faltering, not really working properly, so-called immune response that dies after about 3 months. Once an adult, all adults have had a reasonable chance to get their booster jab, then they're going to start forcing this on everybody, is what they're saying. Now, take a note of just some of the conversations down here. This is, of course, them just moving the goalpost, which is what always continues to happen. I forget who this person was. He looks like a footballer. But it says, I'm double jabbed, but I'm starting to take sides with people that don't want it at all. Whatever we do isn't enough. It seems to me that certain people are pushing this all to make more and more money. Now, of course, their argument's going to be that it's because of the unvaccinated, despite none of the data backing that up, even remotely. If you're going to say that, you got to prove that. When the one time the CDC tried to prove it, they got caught using data from a time when most people were unvaccinated. That's criminal. I mean, that's just blatant misrepresentation to sell their agenda. Then they got caught and then just ran away from it. So why the hell should I even bother getting mine now, it says. I've had none. So why bother with one or two if I need three? Exactly. That'll be 1 year from now if I decided to get it. You're no longer trying to encourage us. They're trying to punish us. I agree with that. Yeah, now there's one other I was going to show you, but just jumping over to the next, my comment first, I said, called it. As anyone with two brain cells to rub together did. Now we endure the calls of conspiracy theory when we point out the inevitability of the ever-changing and meaningless, other than manipulation, definition of fully vaccinated being altered to include the fourth jab. Just try it. Try it. Say it right now. You could write this moment. You could go on Twitter and say that the third jab is going to be required for vaccine passports in the UK, and you will have blue checks call you a conspiracy theory. Right this moment. Somebody try it out and please catch it on film and show it to me. Because these blue checks are not informed. They don't know about this thing. This is new information, right? This is as of yesterday. My guess is they're not up on all the new information. They're only feeding narrative to them. So they probably still think this is fake news. So you could say three. You could even say the fourth one. That'll still be fake news because they don't want it to be. My point is the reality is fake news until they're told by the right people. It's just insulting. It's childish. But here's the other comment that I wanted to show you. And this is the one that really stood out as this is what we all should be thinking right now. So 3 months ago, after my second jab, this guy's got two jabs, I was safe and eligible for a vaccine passport. Now, 3 months later, that's important. It's all about that. I keep telling you this, guys. 3 months later, I'm once again considered an unsafe, evil anti-vaxxer. If I don't get the booster, seems legit. Yet another thing we kept telling you was going to happen. People that have gotten two shots who suddenly just decide they're good, don't want it, are now anti-vaxxers. How does that even make sense? That's already been happening. I think it was the Australian government took the stance that even if you've got three shots, if you're okay with somebody not taking their shots, you're an anti-vaxxer. That's literally what came out of his mouth. This is just rewriting history in real time, changing definitions, changing reality. It's almost like they're seeing how far they can go. But yes, this is ridiculous. You should all know this is ridiculous. Now to the discussion of the danger that they always knew was there, that you knew was there because I told you right in the beginning, because I listened to the experts that were crying foul about this, going, this is dangerous. There's a problem here. James Lyons Weiler was one of the first people that I saw standing up and saying, this is dangerous. It's very clear. And every single thing he called out on the steps of that the Capitol, I believe, has come to pass. How do you not look back and go, gosh, that guy was right about everything and still call him a debunked conspiracy theorist? It's incredible. It's because they're not looking at the information, looking at the narrative. But as I said, something has clearly shifted here. I believe this right now because Fauci is right now talking about the exact same thing that many of us tried to warn you about. And really, the important point there that I made in the parentheses is that we weren't screaming. This is the important differentiation between the way they frame people like me and what we're really doing. We're simply going, this is a scientifically verified potential risk. You have a right, one, to know about it, and two, to say no to this if you believe it's possible, which the scientific research backs up, and that's all you ever needed. And really, truthfully, all you ever needed was your own opinion. You don't need to be, they don't have the right to force anything, no matter what. Even though they do, and always have. But we only said this is possible, and the facts back that up, and we were censored for doing that. Now recognize Fauci saying the exact same thing. He outright states that we don't know if antibody-dependent enhancement is there due to short trials, even though that's not true, even though there's multiple studies I'm going to show you right now that overtly on its face say this is significant, real, and present, and we know that, and here's the data. He knows that's there. These are on NIH websites. So he's lying, and also, and it admits in a very strange way that we don't know if it's there because they didn't do long trial. You mean the super longest safety trials of all time ever that you guys are all screaming about? But wait a minute, how can they be the longest all-time safety trials, best ever done ever, when they're saying we don't know if this is there because they were short trials? Oh, you mean those trials that we just also pointed out are still ongoing, right? I mean, how can we still have ongoing trials? Where was that? Yeah, right here. This study is still ongoing. Long-term safety data. Right? It's yeah, you get the gist. They're lying. That's the point. They're lying to you. That's what it is. So let's watch the full clip here. I showed the opening part of this, and then we will get into the actual data, at least the two main studies that I've shown you more than once about the antibody-dependent enhancement. But ask yourself how this is even possible. That one, that this is only now being stated when this has been here since December 2020, the study that I've been showing you. And two, how can they force this on people? Literally forcing and mandating this, firing people, arresting people in some countries, when he's right now telling you, we don't know. Once we get the long-term data, which, by the way, is being collected from your body out there in the world, pharmacovigilance, remember all that? We just pretend it's not there anymore. They've admitted they were all tracking all of it, every one of you. That came from Ansef Salawi, Operation Warp Speed. They openly admitted they were using all their different surveillance technologies to track you and make sure you were, they told you all this. They're using that to gather the data to find out whether your body might end up attacking itself. Then consider the fact that right now what seems to be happening, that they're all dismissing as fake news or unrelated, is people's body attacking itself based on other things we can't, it's weird, right? Baffled by all these things we're seeing. Now, that should show you a willful choice to not connect the dots by Fauci, by the government, by all of them. Here's the clip.
Safety study, Mark, is to see if I inject it in the arm, does it have some sort of idiosyncratic or bad reaction?
Now, this is never the most important part. It's always subjective, always. But take note of his body language. And his hands. There's a reason we talk about wringing hands, right? As a classic, when you say someone's wringing their hands, you know what that makes you think about. Now take note of that, but make sure you listen to what he's saying.
There's another element to safety, and that is if you vaccinate someone and they make an antibody response and then they get exposed and infected, does the response that you induce actually enhance the infection and make it worse? And the only way you'll know that is if you do an extended study, not in a normal volunteer who has no risk of infection, but in people who are out there in a risk situation.
Yeah, shocking.
This would not be the first time, if it happened, that a vaccine that looked...
Actually, I'm sorry. I need to stop right there. Something just occurred to me right there that I didn't think of before. What did he just admit to you right there? What did he just admit? He just admitted that the only way we're finding out whether or not this causes antibody-dependent enhancement is by doing it in the real world. He just said that we don't know because we only did it with volunteers in the trial. So they've always known that they wouldn't know, and they lied about that. So what they needed was you. Real-world experiments. Monitoring you and finding out whether this heart hurts your body. Then, of course, when they actually start seeing it, they ignore it because it's not true, fake news, safe and effective. So are they even caring whether it's happening? So basically, they need you in the real-world example to find out if it's there, but then when it starts happening, they don't want to tell you about it. Does that sound like something you want to be involved in? I just can't believe, I mean, it's just staggering how obvious this is. Because, not because of anything other than the fact that we've been laying this out since December 2020. Are we really going to pretend that he didn't know about this stuff?
An extended study, not in a normal, actually enhance the infection and make it worse. And the only way you'll know that is if you do an extended study, not in a normal volunteer who has no risk of infection, but in people who are out there in a risk situation. This would not be the first time, if it happened, that a vaccine that looked good in initial safety actually made people worse. There
right.
was the history of the respiratory syncytial virus
And that alone should be enough for you to say, no, thank you. Fauci himself just admitted that there's plenty of history of things they sold to you as safe later hurting you. Later, in fact, causing your body to catastrophically attack itself. That doesn't matter. You're going to force this on me, despite the fact that you had just admitted that we don't know a lot of things, or we don't have information for a lot of people we're telling to force. The guy, this is criminal. If you're out there right now aware of this stuff and not calling this what it is, you are a coward. There's never been more obvious to me in the history of anything I've ever done in my life. It's obvious that this is happening. We see the information. We've got the information in front of us, the scientific research, peer-reviewed and otherwise, all telling you this is a risk. And they're not telling you that. Now he comes out and says, yeah, there's a risk that's been there. We knew that. And we're just never going to find out until we make you guys take this in the real world. That's the summation of what he just said. This is criminal. This is why the people out there like your RFK Juniors and your Peter McCulloughs and all these people are absolutely going all the way with this, because this is a serious thing that's happening right now. This is not some little fringe concept, guys. This is a real deal conspiracy. This is actually what it looks like. These are people, and whether or not you think Fauci or the individuals are involved, we need to start calling this what it is. And if you're afraid to use that word, if you're afraid to label this what it actually is, then you're a child fearful of your adult overlords in the mainstream media telling you, no, that's not what you're supposed to say. That's what conspiracy theorists say, as they ignore all the things that later turn out to be true. Too many people like that out there today. Sorry, this is just so obvious to me. Now, let me go from the middle again, and we'll play it all the way through.
Volunteer who has no risk of infection, but in people who are out there in a risk situation, this would not be the first time, if it happened, that a vaccine that looked good in initial safety actually made people worse. There was the history of the respiratory syncytial virus vaccine in children, which paradoxically made the children worse. One of the HIV vaccines that we tested several years ago actually made individuals more likely to get infected.
Yeah, where have you heard that before?
Just go out there and give it unless you feel that in the field, when someone is getting infected and exposed, being vaccinated doesn't make them worse.
And the only way they find that out is by putting it in the world and watching the response. He just said that. Connect the dots, people. I mean, it's not hard to see what he just admitted right there. And this is a sidestep, or rather a backpedal, right? They are walking back from what they have been pushing on you this entire damn time. And don't forget, guys, it's not just me. I'm the only reason I'm aware of this information is because of people like James Lyons-Weiler, PhD, and the others that stood up and shouted this stuff from the rooftops early on and were attacked relentlessly for it. Just absolutely unreal. And we've been censored ongoing for this discussion. Now, knowing what he's telling you right there, that this is very clearly possible, that they've seen it before. Actually, before I even jump into the science we're going to get into next, let's play the clip that I've shown before, but this shows you another example of somebody else who called this way before me, before anybody else, long before we even really got here. This is right in the beginning. He was crying foul about this because of exactly what he just said. Exactly what the research has shown, everything about this is capable of doing, even when they do what they did, which is increase things like the lipid nanoparticles in order to get the mRNA instructions to where they need to go, and show that that exact type of action historically has caused what? A dramatic increase in adverse events. Weird. It's almost like that's exactly what happened in one angle. That's just my thought about what we're looking at, but I think there's a lot more happening here. The spike protein itself causing the problems, the introduction of all these other things, the mask on top of it, the reducing the lymphocytopenia, the reduction of your immune system because of the injection, the increased risk of catching infection because of the injection for the first 7 days, 50%, in fact, all of this together, it's like a perfect storm of making you sick. Isn't that weird? The thing that's supposed to be safe and effective that's helping, I mean, it's unbelievable. But let's play this clip, and you've seen it before, that shows you that this is a problem. And then realize this person was censored for saying this. I was censored for playing him saying this. And of course, they called him fake news for acknowledging this is possible. Exactly what Fauci just told you now.
Government's been trying for almost 30 years to develop a coronavirus vaccine, and it's been unsuccessful. And beginning in 2002, there were three outbreaks of coronavirus, we call them SARS, at that point in MERS. The first SARS was a natural illness jumped from a bat to human beings. The second two were lab created that escaped and infected human beings. And so the governments of China and a consortium of Western governments all got together and put millions and millions of dollars into an effort to develop a coronavirus vaccine. And between 2002 and 2014, they worked very hard to do that. And what happened is they developed about 35 vaccines, and four of them were really promising. They chose the four most promising, and they gave them to ferrets, which is the animal that is most analogous to human beings when it comes to upper lung respiratory infections. The ferrets had a brilliant, robust, and durable antibody response. But then something horrible happened. And those ferrets were challenged when they were exposed to the wild virus. They got horribly sick. They got inflammation throughout their bodies, and they died. Wow. And the scientists remembered that something very similar had happened in the 1960s, where they had developed a vaccine for RSV, which is very similar to coronavirus. It's an upper respiratory infection ailment. They had skipped the animals and given them directly to 35 children. And the children, again, had developed a very robust antibody response. But when those children were exposed to the wild virus, they got very, very sick, much sicker than unvaccinated children. Two of those kids had died. It was a scandal. And they realized when the same thing happened with the ferrets, that there was something that they called enhanced immune response. It's also called pathogenic priming. And what it means is that when you get the vaccine, it appears that you have an antibody response, but when you actually encounter the wild virus, you become much sicker. And it actually creates a pathway that virus hurts you a lot more than with unvaccinated people. So this was 2012.
Now, the second part of that clip is also very interesting. Del Bigtree's on the panel with him. There's a lot there. But there's important points to make here. And I actually had a conversation about this exact topic with James Lyons Weiler about the difference between antibody-dependent enhancement, molecular mimicry, or pathogenic priming. There's obvious similarities. I mean, I guess generally speaking, it's basically that it does the opposite of what you would expect. Your body hurts itself, but there's differences. Specifically right there, he was talking about pathogenic priming, molecular mimicry. I think that's actually something that James himself coined, the term. But antibody-dependent enhancement is essentially it's specific to the antibodies and how you're basically creating a response that the body then recognizes as a problem. Right. So it's actually much more specific, but I don't want to get into the deep topic of that. Actually, what I was going to do, let me actually see if I can play this clip really right here as I look for that other part, because James Lyons Weiler, let's see. No, it might take too long to find it. I just had that clip of James speaking on those steps. I was going to play it because it's just really important to see how long ago he was calling this stuff out. Really one of the champions of this discussion, like just really, really standing up for us at a time when nobody was. Anyway, it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to pull it up really quickly. Anyway, the point, though, is that all of this ultimately leads to the idea that you're taking something that's supposed to protect you that, in fact, does the opposite. All of this is clear. All of the data backs this up. Now, here is one of the studies that does back this up, exactly what we're talking about. Now, it was published on December 2020, was peer-reviewed on March 2021. Still, neither one of those times has ever in the mainstream media touched it remotely. They've run screaming from this topic. If on December 2020, they were telling you that there was a specific and significant COVID-19 risk of antibody-dependent enhancement, well, wouldn't that have changed whether or not you wanted to take the shot? Yes, it would have. And that's why they ran screaming from it. That's not called information. That's not called journalism. That's called propaganda and gatekeeping. Informed consent disclosure to vaccine trial subjects. This is at a time when there were people in the trials. Even then, they knew that there was a severe risk here. And now we know that, verified, because Fauci said it himself. Of course, there's always been that risk, and we just don't know. We will never know until we push it in people's arms, right? Informed consent disclosure to the trial subjects of risk of COVID-19 vaccines, in fact, worsening clinical disease. Exactly what he just talked about. Let's go through this a little more extensively than usual. Under the aims of the study, patient comprehension is a critical part of meeting medical ethics standards of informed consent in study designs. The aim of the study was to determine if sufficient literature exists to require clinicians to disclose the specific risk that COVID-19 vaccines could worsen disease upon exposure to challenge our circulating virus. Now, remember, we just talked with Brooke Jackson. Just had her on the show. First one, in fact. And she very clearly laid out that this is exactly what the kind of thing she was seeing in the safety trials, that they were not doing what they were supposed to. They were not meeting informed consent. That should undermine the entire thing. So this just simply backs up what she was saying all the way back on December 2020. They're saying, we weren't telling people about this, and you'll see on the conclusion, therefore, we're not meeting informed consent. So as another reason, you should back up what Brooke Jackson has been telling you. Now, under results, it says COVID-19 vaccines designed to elicit neutralizing antibodies may sensitize vaccine recipients to more severe disease than if they were not vaccinated. That's the result of the study. So I don't care if that's 1%. I don't care if that's 0.01%. If you have the chance of having this happen, of course you have the right to say no. They knew this was there and they don't care about that. They don't care about your human rights. They don't care about your medical rights. They don't care about any of that. UNESCO and international law have continued always to state that this, your individual rights supersede that of society and the community. That's international law. That's also the law of the US, the United States, but none of that matters today in regard to their agenda. But it says, importantly, DNA or RNA, and irrespective of the delivery method, may all worsen COVID-19 disease via antibody-dependent enhancement. So whatever one you're using, whether it's AstraZeneca, Pfizer, it's all the same concept in regard to why this is happening. The specific, under their conclusions, specific and significant. You don't say that lightly in a study like this. Specific and significant means that it's very clearly there and it's obviously important. The specific and significant COVID-19 risk of antibody-dependent enhancement in December 2020 while it was still in trials should have been and should now be prominently and independently disclosed to research subjects in those trials. Then they go on to add, as well as those being recruited for those trials, as well as future patients and people that take it after it's approved. Everybody should know that this could hurt you, is what they're saying. And they need to do that in order to meet the medical ethical standards of patient comprehension for informed consent. What this ultimately means is they did not do that. Therefore, they did not meet informed consent. Pretty damn simple. Not hard to miss. NCBI, U.S. National Library of Medicine, National Institute of Health. Still there and peer reviewed, but they won't talk about it. If you really think that Fauci doesn't know about this, that either means that you're aware that he's incompetent or the other only alternative would be that he knows about it and is lying to you. I don't know why either of those make you feel good about where we are right now. And here's the other one that you've seen many times. Now, there's two parts in here that I have only shown the first time we talked about this. So I want to do this again. For many of you that might have missed that first one, this will be more information that you haven't seen on this study. This is, again, on August 9th, 2021, Journal of Infection. All of these are some of the most highly regarded publications for scientific studies, as they ignore the 90% of what comes out today and scream that we're not trusting the science. It's ridiculous. Even though trusting the science is a childish thing to say, because you don't trust science, you trust the scientific method. Science is wrong all the time. Scientific method is how you find that out. They're telling you to trust what they tell you the science is. Infection-enhancing anti-SARS-CoV-2 antibodies recognize both the original Wuhan strain and Delta variants. And what does that mean? A potential risk for vaccination is what they say. Well, highlights antibody-dependent enhancement is a potential concern for vaccines. There you go. That's enough. Enough. Right there. You have enough to say, I don't have to take this. You can't force me because it's obviously potentially dangerous. So if on December 2020, they found a significant and specific risk of exactly the same thing, then on August 9th, 2021, one of the leading journals found the same thing. Ask yourself how it's possible that this is not being discussed unless there's an agenda around this topic. It says here, since the COVID-19 pandemic is now dominated with Delta variants, which, by the way, in August they claimed was true. Now Fauci's telling you it still is true, regardless of whether it is. That's their narrative. So in their narrative, they're telling you Delta's everywhere. So here is why this is valid. Since the COVID-19 pandemic is dominated with Delta variants, we analyzed the interaction of facilitating antibodies with the NDT of these variants. And that was, I looked at that earlier. There it is. That's right. N-terminal domain. I mean, it's not entirely relevant for the point we're getting at, but just to know what the acronym stands for. So it says that we analyze the interaction of facilitating antibodies with the N-terminal domain of these variants. It will matter for people that are more scientifically inclined. It says our data suggests that the balance between neutralizing and facilitating antibodies, right? So neutralizing is what you want. Neutralizing are what stops the bad stuff. The facilitating are what lead to antibody-dependent enhancement. So it's saying our data suggests that the balance between those two antibodies in vaccinated individuals is in favor of neutralization for the original strain. right? So they based it on that, and that's why they claim it would work. Even then, I'm not taking any of this base value. It doesn't even matter at this point. We're so far down the road, but they're claiming it works for that one alone, which is what I keep telling you. It says, however, in the case of the Delta variant, neutralizing antibodies have a decreased affinity for the spike protein, whereas facilitating antibodies, which are the bad, what you don't want, display a strikingly increased affinity. Thus, antibody-dependent enhancement may be a concern for people receiving vaccines based on the original strain while we're dealing with Delta, which we have to acknowledge, at least what they're telling us, is that's exactly where we are right now, right? As they sprint to make something under the guise of Omicron, which is probably why they're using that as the excuse, because they need to get away from this obvious reality that they're not reporting to you. But more in depth here, this is important on the conclusion. It says, antibody-dependent enhancement may occur in people receiving vaccines based on the original strain spike sequence, either mRNA or viral vector, either way, and then exposed to the Delta variant, which is, again, exactly what's happening right now. I thought I had something else in the middle, but I might have hit it on accident. Either way. Now it says, this potential risk has been cleverly anticipated before the massive use of COVID vaccines. That's what it says. So guess what? There's a third one. And there's more than three, by the way, but this is just simply for the two main that I keep showing you. Well, in this one study, they point out that even before that, this study, back in April 2020, found that this is a possibility. And it's not a shocker because, again, Fauci said it's always been a possibility. We've always known that. It says there is a desperate need for effectiveness or for effective therapies and vaccines for SARS-CoV-2, and this is just what they're stating, to mitigate the growing economic crisis, which I find kind of funny. We need vaccines to stop the economic crisis that the government lockdown and that have ensued from societal lockdown. I almost feel like this author is trying to say what we think without getting it, you know, on the nose, so he loses funding. Basically, admitting the lockdowns destroyed the economy. Just that's funny. I think that's obviously the reality. Vaccines are being developed at an unprecedented speed and are already in clinical trials. Again, kind of in a way saying, well, that doesn't sound like a good thing, without preclinical testing for safety and efficacy. This is Nature. This is, if not the leading scientific publication. Unprecedented speed and already in clinical trials without preclinical testing for safety and efficacy. That's not what you hear from the mainstream media. Yet, safety evaluation of candidate vaccines must not be overlooked. And that's exactly what did happen. And here's just the main point. We argue that antibody-dependent enhancement should be given full consideration in the safety evaluation of emerging candidate vaccines for SARS-CoV-2. Oops. So not only in Nature in April said, yeah, this is, we need to make sure this is addressed. Then in December 2020, they said, yes, it's very clearly there and it's obviously a risk and we need to tell people. And then in August, they said, yeah, still there. And with Delta, it's even worse and it's still happening. And they said that maybe that's why he's grudgingly admitting it now. Either way, if you're watching this, you need to see, you must be able to acknowledge how obviously dishonest this all is. There's no way you can miss that. But then, acknowledging that this is an obvious risk for the average person, especially when you add on the fact that they can be have a dramatically increased reaction if they've already had natural immunity. Very clear as well. That's why I think we're seeing this. This is the Telegraph. Omicron wave driven by young, healthy, vaccinated population. Isn't that hilarious? Because this is exactly what we were reporting and being censored for right out of the gate. Not because I was guessing, but because we were looking at the information that they were afraid to show you until they were allowed to say it, and we're telling you this. And not again, it's not just me. There's a lot of other people out there that were doing the same thing. A lot of people that people want to label progressives and a lot of people that want to label conservatives. However you want to look at this. Most of them, in my opinion, are very aware that this is a two-party illusion, even though they, to some degree, tap into one side or the other. I just try really hard not to get involved in any of it. But a lot of people saw this because it was very clear. From South Africa to Botswana to the first claims of seeing it in the U.S., it's obviously not happening in unvaccinated people. I mean, it's just very clear. Not to be the absolute, obviously, their claims are some, but overall, if even they're admitting 80%, it's obvious what's actually happening. Here is an article that goes into it in depth. Expert reveals who is spreading Omicron variant of COVID-19. The Omicron wave of the coronavirus pandemic is being driven by young, healthy, vaccinated people, according to the WHO. Data from countries including the UK, Denmark, South Africa show a similar pattern of infection with the new variant, which has now been detected in more than 60 countries, including Australia, which, again, you know my point. It's just, we're so far past the point now. It's like, once it gets acknowledged, then it just goes, it's a free-for-all. It's all Omicron if you get a COVID-19 test. It's just what it becomes. Some of them probably are based on what they're telling you. It doesn't mean that I believe that's actually what's happening. But then I promise you, many of them are just assumption. Estimations, if you want to argue based on their best estimate or whatever. But I just, there's no way with a limited ability of genetic sequencing and all these places that they just know every single, it's been nonstop. Anyway, it says, quote, generally those first cases are in relatively young, relatively healthy, and in the context of Europe, in relatively highly vaccinated groups. That's Catherine Smallwood, a senior emergency officer. Now, remember, guys, what we just talked about in the beginning, they're already shifting the definition of fully vaccinated. So we need to genuinely ask the question here. If they say 80%, what's the likelihood that the other 20% are people that had one shot, two shots, three shots, and not yet 14 days? I think it's pretty high. Clearly, either way, they're admitting that it's predominantly vaccinated people. And I haven't seen any actual evidence of somebody who hasn't had an injection having Omicron. That does not mean it's not happening. But all we can do is go on what we can prove. And right now, across the board, the only thing I've seen is vaccinated. And now they're even admitting that predominantly. There's something happening here. I think we can all see that. It says in Australia, New South Wales recorded a massive spike in cases on Tuesday as the cluster linked to a Newcastle nightclub, which, by the way, requires proof of vaccination to enter, and it continues to grow. We've been seeing this. Kim Iverson just pointed out a good one. 100 different people, they claim, all had Omicron. All of them are vaccinated, and every single one that caught it was vaccinated. There's no way you dismiss something like that. That's a microcosm. If only people in this big room were vaccinated, and people caught in that room, and they spread it to the people in that room, and they spread it to the people in that room, and there's no unvaccinated in that mix to make it, you can't just be like, I bet you one of them was unvaccinated, they were lying. It just doesn't make sense. One person being in that room as unvaccinated does not therefore immediately mean it's going to spread like crazy, because that's not even what they're arguing. That's the childish reduced version of that argument. By default, if you're unvaccinated, it doesn't mean that you're sick. And even if it did, let's say, mean that you were sick, why would we then argue that that would translate into creating all the rest of them being able to catch it? That has no bearing on whether you are able to catch and spread something. That's the vaccine that's supposed to have that bearing on it. It's such an obvious childish argument. It says more than 93% of people over age 16 in New South Wales are fully vaccinated. So not only is everyone in that nightclub vaccinated, over 93% of people are fully vaccinated in the territory. And yet here we are watching this explode. In Denmark, 70% of its 3,437 Omicron cases detected have been among people under the age of 40. So what we are seeing here is a very clear example that this is spreading dramatically through the vaccinated population. And adding in everything else we're talking about, it could also be likely that this is not even something that they're telling. This could be simply vaccinated effects. This could simply be antibody-dependent enhancement, the spike protein itself being shed and spread and on and on and on. Certainly possible. Either way, there is no angle in this story that makes it out to be a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Simply not, based on the data from the UK, Scotland, elsewhere, and what they're telling you right now. And there's also no evidence to suggest that this is only happening because people didn't want to get injected. Now, it says the European Center for Disease Control found 72% of early Omicron cases were under 40, while the US had the majority of its 43 infections. We're in the same age bracket as just under 80% were fully vaccinated. Omicron spreads more than Delta, they say, but the consequences aren't more than Delta, says the ANU infectious disease expert from speaking with the Daily Telegraph. Right. So if it's not more dangerous than Delta, why are we using it to justify new vaccines? Why are we using it to justify lockdowns and aggressive measures and forcing forth boosters? Oh, no answer to that, right? As if they were going to answer. The point is there's nothing to back that up. It's fear driving the actions. The data very clearly shows you that it's not more dangerous. And I've been telling you that from the beginning. Quote, it's really important we don't get ahead of ourselves in terms of judging the severity of the Omicron. Right, because we want to, just like Delta, just go on for months and years later acting like it could be more dangerous tomorrow. Quote, because in terms of the cases we've picked up, they're in a healthier, more mobile, younger, highly vaccinated population. And we're not even that far into the disease trajectory. This is affecting the people that are taking the injections and, in fact, the people that are at the least risk. That can't be overlooked. Literally the least risk are being the most affected in regard to this right now point. Then on top of that, you have the elderly on the other side of it who are taking the injection, and they're being the most affected in regard to the, like right now, the people that are at most risk that should be wanting the best protection. Over 60, comorbidities, and so on, are the people having the worst effect in the larger discussion of the vaccine administration. Now, in regard to specifically Omicron, we have the group that is at the least risk, who was forced into getting this injection, who has now been risen up to be one of the high-risk prop. I mean, this is clear. As always, the only point is that you should have a choice. There's no way, with everything we're staring at, that they should be able to force you to take something like this. They shouldn't. They're not allowed to anyway, but especially when their narrative is falling apart at the seams. As Kim points out, 37 NFL players tested positive for COVID today. And as she says, I wonder what Aaron Rodgers is thinking. Probably, I told you so. It's an ongoing reality that they're just going to point to the unvaccinated as if that justifies whatever they continue to see. And Fauci's very clearly telling you, well, if it becomes necessary, this is a reiteration of the same thing you just said the other day. If it becomes necessary to get another booster shot, then we'll just have to deal with it. Right, the booster that's not actually effective, that's hurting people, that's not even primed to what we're dealing with right now, and that's creating antibody-dependent enhancement. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and just deal with that. Well, again, don't forget that this is what's happening. It's already going that direction. He knows that. He's just dragging his feet. It's now going to be three jabs to be able to have your passport. So people that had two now have to get a third one, or they're also now not allowed to engage with society. It's just unbelievable. But here is what BBC has to say, which is actually quite revealing. Omicron, why do boosters work if two doses struggle? That's a good question. Watch as they do mental gymnastics to try to make sense of this. Two doses of some vaccines offer almost no protection from Omicron, all of them, although they should still greatly reduce the risk of becoming so ill you need hospital care. Don't you love how that's changed a little bit? Don't you remember when it was super rare to get hospitalized or death? And that's just, you know, take it and you're super safe. As Biden said, take this and you won't get sick, you won't die, that won't happen. Well, now it is. Well, take the third shot, even though the first two do nothing, and they should still greatly reduce the risk of becoming so ill that you go to the hospital. You're going to get pretty sick though, right? It's just, I can't believe people are still going along with this. The vaccines were all developed to fight the first form of the virus emerging 2 years ago. Yep. That's what we just told you. That's why it's not working. So can a third or booster dose of the original vaccines make the difference, or has Omicron already outwitted his protection that they give? I still debate whether they even did anything in regard to what, you know, relative risk reduction versus absolute risk reduction, and whether that 0.8, that, you know, 0.85 reduction even means anything in regard to actually keeping people safe. But it says the protection you're left with, fortunately for us, it says, while the contents of the syringe may be identical, not true, by the way, so just yet again, towing the line, they have no idea what they're talking about, a booster is not just more of the same for the immune system. Yeah, it really is. The protection you're left with after the third dose is bigger, broader, and more memorable. Okay, so here's where they dip into the childish analogy on how they teach you your immune system goes to school and it learns things. Bottom line, guys, the science does not back this up. And you could talk to any expert out there who is really willing to dive into this discussion. Is it possible that this could trigger something? Sure. But at the end of the day, this is the same shot that triggers the same response. And yes, you can factor in what's already in your body, but it has already been shown to not have the effect. Do you know why? Oh, that was my fault. This was supposed to be next, because they've already shifted into the next one, right? We've already seen this happen. We've already watched them shift to the next shot. We're already right now in the UK discussing possible fourth shots. Let's see if I can grab that real quick. Here we go. This is even better. So there was the Children's Health Defense article that just showed that they're already, and I already showed you as well. They're already floating. Pfizer's floating while we're probably going to need the fourth shot right away. Here's Jerusalem Post saying three shot with Pfizer is four times less effective against Omicron. And that's what they're selling you on right now. Three shots, right? He's telling you three shots are required now. So here they are actually saying that sure third shot's going to change everything. That's in real time already being shown to be false. But the BBC is nothing if not absolute garbage for the narrative. How pathetic is that? These people are the most uninformed out there, or they know they're lying and they don't care. The science doesn't back that up. And then let's just say it was actually three shots in a row in a normal sense would actually do that. And maybe it could in some cases. But then you realize we're dealing with a different thing. You're still giving them the shot that's tailored to a strain that's not there. And that's producing antibodies for something that's not actually happening. If that's even, and then of course your body recognizes that and attacks itself. On and on and on. But just get the third one because Fauci said. Well, here's the important part in regard to the natural immunity and how that, remember the full picture here that you're not, if you get infected first, let's see. Here we go. If you get infected first and then get the injection, well, as we already showed you, it creates antibody-dependent enhancement, or rather just specifically danger to your body, which is this study I've shown many times as well from May 2021. Previous COVID infection is associated with increased adverse events after Pfizer. So the point being, this study is a really important study, as Dr. McCary says, and I agree, because it highlights some important information. And the way that they talk about this is a very careful conversation, because I think that what they're ultimately pointing at is the reality that the vaccines aren't having the effect that they claim they do, and the natural immunity is showing to continue even with Omicron. And then we're going to go over very quickly the things we've shown you before, and again in a little more depth further down, that show you that this is continuing, and that it should, based on the science, continue whatever variants come forward with natural immunity, not the injection. So Dr. Marty McCary from Johns Hopkins, PhD, or excuse me, MD, MPH, I forget what that stands for again. In any case, T-cell immunity is strong and effective against Omicron. Now, first of all, I have not seen any evidence that this is creating T-cell immunity with the injection. I know that's been floated and claimed, but the science I've seen never gets into that. It's only about specific antibodies for specific spike protein in regard to an old strain. Is it possible I'm wrong? Sure. But I have not seen the evidence to back that up. That's why I've continued to say that. Regardless, what we do know is that all of it, everything that thing does, whatever it is, dies off very quickly. 3 months to 6 months, gone. Down to zero, according to Israel. So when it says T cell immunity is strong and effective against Omicron, recognize that that's including natural immunity. But then also recognize that I don't think that in the injections are even coming close to that. So what does that mean? That your natural immunity is still effective against Omicron. And we'll get into the study. But also remember that people have been shown to have immunity before we ever got here. That's a really important one. Here's just one of them. I've shown two studies in the past, but this is also Nature from July 2020 that found that they had that SARS-CoV-2 specific T cell immunity was already present in people who had got SARS, and then just randomly, which they didn't expect to find, people that were in their uninfected controls. People that were just the controls meant to be nothing that they can compare with. And oh, turned out they have T-cell immunity. Oh, that's, I do remember the other one. This is the most important one. And I've shown these, I haven't shown these in a while. Here is from March 15th. And it's simply showing you that a majority of uninfected adults before this all started already showed pre-existing antibody reactivity. And it goes into why, because of SARS, because of the cold, because of all sorts of other things, or maybe the possibility that was circulating, that shows that it wasn't more dangerous before we ever started screaming about this. Either way you look at it, if a majority of adults before this started already had antibody reactivity, and uninfected controls, for whatever reason, had T-cell immunity, what we need to see here, where was I? Oh, shoot. One second. I lost this tweet that I had up. I don't want to lose the tweet. There we go. So anyway, back to the point. So what it's ultimately getting at is that all of these things in natural immunity are shown to continue doing this. And then it also shows you that when you take the injection, it removes that stuff. Right? There's multiple things I've shown you that show that discuss how it removes the antibodies from your blood.
Finding. So the key message from our finding is that we found that recipients of the Pfizer vaccine, those who've had two doses, have about 5 to 6-fold lower amounts of neutralizing antibodies.
Now it goes on to say the same thing. I'll include this for you to watch for yourself. Bear with me as I play the next one. For those that have not seen these things, it's very important.
On your COVID-19 vaccine, you're going to want to listen to this. The Red Cross says anyone who has received their COVID-19 vaccine cannot donate convalescent plasma to help other COVID-19 patients in hospitals. That plasma is made up of antibodies from people who have recovered from the virus, but the vaccine wipes out those antibodies, making the convalescent plasma ineffective in treating other COVID-19 patients.
I just love how I know there's people out there that just can't stand that we play the same things over. These are people that don't care about what we're trying to accomplish here, right? This is about continually battering down the narrative because that's what they're doing. They continually lie about the narrative over and over. No matter how many times we prove it, there's the next day of masks work and it's perfect and we all know it. You know, it's nonsense. So we keep battering it back. That's what we're here for. And every day we reach one more person. Now, the point is, guys, that I believe what's happening here is that people are getting natural immunity from before this, however they have this, and then they get the injection, and that's removing this stuff. Not entirely, though. So you end up with people who might have some T-cell, some recognizable T-cell immunity, but far, far removed, reduced, after they got the injection. So that might be misconstrued as having T-cell immunity because of the injection. You see what I mean? Because as I point out here, people already had T-cell immunity before this ever started. So the scientific evidence shows, in my opinion, that this is not creating T-cell immunity. They're just simply saying because they find it after the study that therefore it must be the injection, knowing that there's already science that shows that it was there before. I hope you follow, right? So the point is, this is coming from natural immunity alone, in my opinion. And what they're finding here is that that continues with Omicron, where the injections, they don't find that. It says this is the most significant scientific paper of the entire Omicron saga. The fixation on antibody levels has diverted attention away from comprehensive immunity, including cellular. And that's the main point. This has been very clearly shifted into ignoring the other parts of this. Mucosal immunity being a big part of that, which that's the injections do not create, which is why they have higher viral load and it continues to spread and catch within the vaccine population, almost as if that was on purpose. That's why they're making nasal sprays and all these different pills to fight, you know, pills that now stop hospitalization and death, even though they swore up and down. It was super rare and it never happened. And now making pills to take along with the vaccine that reduce the thing that's not supposed to be happening. It's a joke. And by the way, they're doing exactly what these other things have done that they're trying to hide from you. We'll get into that later in the show. Now let's jump into the actual study. December 9th, minimal crossover between mutations associated with Omicron variant of SARS-CoV-2 and CD8 T-cell epitopes identified in COVID-19 convalescent individuals. So people that got sick and recovered, not with injection. That's what convalescent would be discussing now. Or I guess you could argue that someone could be convalescing after maybe getting it first, then getting sick, but that's not what we're talking about here. And then in a moment, I'll play another clip here that ties in with the CD8 T cells. But here's what it says in the abstract. There is growing concern that ongoing evolution of SARS-CoV-2 could lead to variants of concern that are capable of avoiding some or all of the multifaceted immune response generated by both prior infection or vaccination. Again, this is where I get into the point where I don't believe vaccination is causing T-cell immunity or triggering that, with the recently described B11529 Omicron variant of concern being of particular interest. Now, if we read the last part, remember, this study, we'll get back to it in a second, where it tells you that you've been if you have natural immunity from being sick in 2020, then you've continued to make full comprehensive immunity, T-cell, memory B, all of it, and antibodies neutralizing for all of the variants of concern that have popped up after that. We'll come back to this. Okay, so that's clear. And they find that here too, but they don't find it in the vaccination. It continues to be even more clear. These data suggest that virtually all individuals with existing anti-SARS-CoV-2 CD8 T-cell responses should recognize the Omicron variant of concern. Exactly. And that SARS-CoV-2 has not evolved extensive T-cell escape mutations at this time. Now, you can look at this a lot of different ways, but what we're basically hearing is that it's not that if you have CD8 T cell responses, then it's recognizing Omicron and you're fighting it off. The question should be then, are people who are vaccinated and have never caught this even on that spectrum? Do they even have T cell responses at all? Well, here's a good example of why it's pretty obviously not the case, or at the very least that it's dramatically lowering what you might have already had from a natural infection.
But what we're seeing in the laboratory after people get these shots, we're seeing a very concerning locked-in low profile of these important killer T cells that you want in your body. It's almost a reverse HIV. In HIV, you lose your helper T cells, your CD4 cells. In this virus post-vaccine, what we're seeing is a drop in your killer T cells, your CD8 cells. And what did CD8 cells do? They keep all other viruses in check. What am I seeing in the laboratory? I'm seeing an uptick of herpes family viruses. I'm seeing herpes. I'm seeing shingles. I'm seeing mono. I'm seeing a huge uptick in human papillomavirus in the cervical biopsies and the cervical pap smears in women. In addition to that, there's a little infectious, you know, bump the kids get called molluscum contagiosum. What do you need to keep that in check? You need CD8 killer T cells. I am seeing a 20 times increase in individuals over the age of 50 of this little bump and rash. You know, that's innocuous, but what it tells me is the immune status of these individuals who have gotten the shot. We're literally weakening the immune system of these individuals. Now, most concerning of all is there's a pattern of these types of immune cells in the body that keep cancer in check. Well, since January 1, in the laboratory, I've seen a 20 times increase of endometrial cancers over what I see on an annual basis. A 20 times increase. I'm not exaggerating at all, because I look at my numbers year over year. I'm like, gosh, I've never seen this many endometrial cancers before. I'm seeing invasive melanomas in younger patients. Normally, we catch those early, and they're thin melanomas. I'm seeing thick melanomas skyrocketing in the last month or two. I'm already seeing the early signals, and we are modifying the immune system to a weakened state. Great study out of Germany that looked at these profiles on young individuals after the Pfizer, showing this locked in, and we don't know how long. Maybe the immune system, you know, is going to regenerate and those ratios will go back up, but who's studying it? And where are the long-term trials? 2 months, 4 months, how long is this profile locked in? We don't know.
Exactly. Right. So how do you argue that this is in what we're seeing, the increase, when in reality, that's actually removing those things from your body? Now, here is the discussion of what he's referencing, the concept of your decreased immune system. The same point. Here's the discussion of cancer from Swiss Policy Research. And really, it's more specifically about what's called lymphocytopenia. And this is a study you can research for yourself. Swiss Policy Research has been doing an outstanding job on this. It's saying it has been shown that up to 50% of people who take the injection can induce a temporary immune suppression or immune dysregulation, lymphocytopenia, that may last about a week or possibly longer, potentially indefinite. That's what he's talking about. Now, I want to quickly shout out something Orwell said in the chat, which is just upsetting to me. Said they just removed her girlfriend from the liver transplant list that she has been on for 4 years because she won't take the jab. You know, and this is the kind of thing we're seeing. People that are refusing to increase their risk, to decrease their immune system at a time when they couldn't be more important not to. Right? You're on the donor list and you're going to take something that just suppresses your immune system? That makes a lot of sense. It's just sad. So now she's going to suffer because people are uninformed. The data suggests that virtually all individuals with existing anti-SARS-CoV-2 CD8 T-cell responses should recognize Omicron, right? And the injection they're giving people are removing those CD8 T-cells. Seems pretty clear, doesn't it? Now, here's the main point. The newly identified Omicron variant of concern contains more mutations than any of the previous variants described to date, which doesn't necessarily mean that it's more dangerous. In fact, it almost clearly, like, this is the past discussion of how these things become endemic, where they wildly mutate over time to increase the transmissibility, but the severity goes down dramatically. So then it spreads, but we don't even notice it, other than a few, you know, just like with the flu. People get sick, people die every year. That is how life works. There's a risk-benefit analysis here that we are ignoring or pretending makes sense in a way that it doesn't. But it says, in addition, many of the mutations associated with the Omicron variant are found in areas that are likely bound by neutralizing antibodies. suggesting that the first line of immunological defense against COVID-19 may be compromised. What we're talking about here specifically is in neutralizing antibodies in people who only have those, like vaccinated people. And the neutralizing antibodies, specifically in vaccinated people, are not working. And that's why we already showed the discussion where they're saying, yeah, it's pretty much the vaccinated that are spreading this. Omicron wave driven by young, healthy, vaccinated population, which makes no sense in the concept of a typical respiratory virus. Right? Since when have the young and the healthy been the ones all catching the problem? That's not usually how this works, is it? Except when we're dealing with something that's not normal. Now it says, however, both natural infection and vaccination. Oh, my point was that say that so if it is somehow bypassing neutralizing antibodies, the people that also have T-cell immunity, memory B, and everything else we've talked about, still have protection. The people that only have neutralizing antibodies, well, that they don't. And what is the world showing us right now? The vaccinated affecting, being most predominantly affected by this. Now it says, however, both natural infection and vaccination develop T-cell-based responses in addition to antibodies. Now, this is being pulling on the studies that we've talked about, where they do these trials and they test these things, and then when they do the blood samples, they find T-cell response. Now, is that because of the injection, or is it because they already had pre-existing T-cell responses? Oh, that's the wrong one, right here. Right? I mean, that's a valid question, right? And we already shown how it reduces these things. So is it possible then that's why they're not really having able to fight anything else off, because they don't have enough, but it's still present. So they still recognize, at least on the surface, that it looks like this is causing that or creating T-cell responses. Anyway, the point they're saying, they both can do that. Okay, that's all he's saying. But it says this study, however, examined if the parts of the virus or epitopes targeted by the CD8 T-cells, which are dramatically lower in people who are vaccinated, in 30 individuals who recovered from COVID-19 in 2020 were mutated in the Omicron variant. Only one of 52 epitopes identified in the population contained an amino acid that was mutated in Omicron. The data suggests that the T-cell immune response in previously infected and most likely vaccinated individuals should still be effective against Omicron. Yeah, you know what that's telling you. They're clearly finding that your response that we know natural immunity produces is still effective against Omicron, just like science told you back then would still be. And now it's being vindicated. So what I've been telling you, that this would continue to make antibodies, T-cell, memory B, and response immunity all-encompassing in regard to the new variants of concern, whatever they may be, is being vindicated by this new study saying, yep, they still do. But they're including the vaccinated in there saying, well, they too still maybe are having this effect. And why are they saying maybe? Because they're not clearly, one, it's very much lower than people who are having the natural infection and then the immunity that follows, as well as the fact that I actually don't believe that it's even being created by the injection. Either way, the study says, yes, it's happening for previous infected, and maybe the vaccinated will have that response too. Think about that. So very clear what's actually happening. And then just to, again, dive a little bit deeper on this for those that haven't seen me do that since the first time I talked about this. For those in the podcast, the title is Ultra Potent Antibodies Against Diverse and Highly Transmissible SARS-CoV-2 Variants. And I've read this many times in the abstract, but let's jump down here to the conclusion. It says, our study demonstrates that convalescent subjects, people who have gotten sick and recovered, previously infected with an ancestral variant of SARS-CoV-2 produce antibodies that cross-neutralize emerging variants of concern with high potency. Make sure you hear, that's incredibly obvious. What we're demonstrating is that people that previously get sick produce antibodies that continue to cross-neutralize for emerging variants of concern with high potency. The vaccine is very clearly not doing that, no matter how you slice this. But your natural immunity is. They know that, and they're not telling you that. Structural and functional analyses reveal that antibody breadth is mediated by targeting a site of vulnerability at the RBD tip offset from major mutational hotspots in variants of concern. The sites defined by these antibodies may induce breadth against current and future variants of concern. Look at that. Exactly what we've been telling you. Now, I don't know if I thought I had maybe one more part in this. Let me see. We've only gone through this in depth one time, and then the rest has been follow-up. Yeah, I think that was it for the most part. So again, the gist, as I've read many times, and I probably will again, They identified four antibodies from early outbreak convalescent donors that were potent against 23 variants, including variants of concern, and they continue to do so as they go forward. Not hard to miss. Oh, and then just in general, if you've had COVID, you probably make antibodies for the rest of your life. But it's only the shot that matters, right? Couldn't be more obvious. Now, here's how we're going to get the show censored right now on YouTube, just like last time. Within seconds after playing this, they censored us under a copyright strike because they're cowards, because they just need to find an excuse to censor the truth. But here, again, is another example from the 12th of another footballer collapsing, or rather just clutching his chest with problems, and nobody wants to address this reality. For those in the podcast, it's just simply what you would imagine. The link will be in the show notes. He is hunched over, grabbing his chest, collapsed. Now, look, could this be any other thing? Sure. I'm not arguing that we know for sure that all of these are connected, but the reality is far more than the average 1.46 per 100,000 per year have had cardiac events on the field, many of them dead. Almost 300 at this point. I would argue over 300 when you include all of the children that have had this problem too. Nobody wants to talk about this other than those that we've already referenced. Now, here is a little clip I just want to play for you of vaccine-injured women calling for choice and help to recover from their injuries, while everybody in the mainstream sphere calls them anti-vaxxers, conspiracy theorists, liars, crazy, because that's what good people look like. Don't forget that. The good people are the ones attacking these women.
Hello, Pfizer.
Hello, Pfizer.
Hello, Moderna.
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 Hello, Pfizer.
Hello, Pfizer.
Hi, AstraZeneca.
Hello, Pfizer.
Hello, Pfizer.
Hello, J&J.
Hello, Pfizer.
Hello, CDC.
Hello, CDC.
Hello, CDC.
Hello, CDC.
Hello, FDA.
Hello, world.
And the one, do you need to see Fire Medical?
Let's set the record straight.
Our goal is not intended to spread a further divide
in the vax versus anti-vax community.
We are pro-choice,
pro-information,
but most importantly,
pro-safety.
We have been hurt.
Our lives have been altered,
and we need help.
Doctors are scrambling for answers.
And we are desperate for help.
Help share our stories.
Help our voices be heard.
Help us bring together the medical community
so we can receive the help we so desperately need.
We are real.
We are real.
We are here.
We are here.
And we want our lives back.
We are real, not rare.
Hashtag real, not rare. Not
there. Very sad. You know, and again, the point to take away is not proof that they're all being injured. The takeaway is that these people are suffering. Something happened. Could it be coincidence? Sure, certainly possible. But as to use the argument they used to suppress things that were true in the beginning, it's far more than the normal amount. Right? Isn't that supposed to matter? It's far, far, far more than what's supposed to be happening in regard to these incidences in respectively, individually, whether myocarditis, whether Bell's palsy, whether seizures or strokes or heart attacks, they're all way, way more than the average amount. And people have been calling that out even in the mainstream. And nonetheless, when these people stand up and say, I'm not trying to say, don't take the shot. I'm not saying you, whatever. I'm simply going, look, I need help. And nobody wants to help me. They're calling me crazy. They're calling me anti-vaxxer. The doctor says we can't do anything for you because we don't even know what's happening. They're relegated to some corner and acting like they don't even exist. That's the point. And the only reason that's happening, even if you think they're wrong, is because this has been so aggressively politicized that they're people are afraid to even acknowledge them. And the authorities are the ones calling them crazy without even doing the research. And I mean like literal research into their case. Like Maddie in a wheelchair today with a tube in her nose, where they still maintain that she has a mental problem and they wrote it down as an abdominal pain. Easy to verify. In a wheelchair, but they put it on Bayer's. It was abdominal pain. You think that was an accident? This is criminal. And then when you get nurses and different people that want to speak out about what they're finding, even things that are ostensibly not even connected to COVID-19 on the writing, they still remove the account. Here's what this person said. Had dinner with a friend, a dear friend, an oncologist last night. She said they're seeing soft tissue cancers through the roof, quote, in 2021. 550% increase. By the way, we're seeing this vindicated by plenty of other cardiologists all over, oncologists, cardiologists, all over. And yes, those two things are very different. I'm just saying in regard to cardiology, I'm thinking the heart problems and everything else. But in regard to cancer here, these are being reported all over the place. You just saw Dr. Cole say the same thing. She goes on to say, she says that she's never seen anything like it in 28 years. Said they were extremely concerned, but we don't know why it's happening. That's it. Now, couldn't you even argue that her argument is that's because of COVID? But no, you see, because that touches on something that they're very, very afraid of people understanding, they censor the account. This is the most obvious reality. A nurse who has every right to speak on what she spoke with her friend about, who her friend being an expert in the field, and didn't even connect it with some political talking point, just simply said, they're seeing lots of cancer. They don't know why. How is that not allowed on a, you know why though. It's obvious that they're trying to cultivate the flow of information. And you can go further down and see there's a lot of this happening. Other nurses, other people on the platforms, oh, look at this. And I'm not trying to argue that every one of them didn't. You know my thoughts in general. Censorship is bad in general. I mean, there are just people that are going to say bad things or be disgusting human beings, and that's just the reality of the world. It's not going to change when you censor them and throw them into a room together where we can't. That's the argument there. But at the end of the day, the answer to bad speech is more speech. So I don't agree with censoring anybody, even if you think they're wrong. But the point here is that this is happening everywhere. And don't forget that Facebook, we just exposed in a previous show, as many of us did, in a court case, ReclaimTheNet.com proved that their argument was the reason you can't hold us accountable for fact checks that are verifiably false is because they constitute our, quote, protected opinion. That's what they argued in court. So an opinion is not a fact. So you're not fact checking anybody, you're opinion checking people. And that shouldn't be used to remove posts or affect people's livelihoods, even though it is. Because the mainstream and the government are using Facebook fact checks. And they're based on opinion, which is based on the narrative, not experts behind that. But they just argued that in real time. And this is being used to control the flow of information. And these people are being censored by those opinion checks. Hashtag opinion checks. Let's get that going. Screw Facebook and their manipulation. All of them are doing it. YouTube, Twitter, all of it. It's not fact checks. It's opinion checks. Now, here is Sajid Javid. I always feel right. I guarantee I'm mispronouncing his name. From today, all 12 to 15-year-olds who've had both doses, except they've already just... This is how silly this is. This is yesterday. Right? Yesterday. Where was that again? Let me grab that tweet. Okay. So yesterday... Where were we? Right here? There we go. Yesterday, Javad says, from today, all 12 to 15-year-olds who have had both doses of the vaccine can apply for an international travel COVID pass. Okay. So how does that make sense? If the same day you said your vaccine passport will not be valid unless you've got three. Anybody confused? You should be, because they're trying to confuse you. 12 to 15-year-olds can now have a passport with two jabs that is immediately invalid unless they get the third. They're just trying to get, this is the point, guys, as I've been saying from in regard to the infrastructure. If you step into this, you're trapped forever. And it's very clear, however you want to see this going forward. It's just it's a never-ending series. And the point is, in the same day, he's arguing these people can have a passport with two, even though he just said it doesn't make sense unless you have three. How does that make sense? They're lying to you. That's why. In Australia, we just showed you the law from Victoria yesterday that was just over the top. Basically, we can do whatever we want. There's the illusion of checks and balances that we can dismiss, and it can go on as long as we want forever. And we can arrest you for no reason, and you can't do anything about it. That's basically what it amounts to. Australia, from the 17th of December, the unvaccinated will now be fined up to $13,000 or 6 months in prison for offenses such as sneezing or coughing in public. Now, of course, this is a clip that's taken, you know, out of the larger thing. And the overarching point, as always, is that they're trying to suggest that, you know, if you do it on purpose, which means nothing because that's a subjective point that they can argue. It's clear based on this that you did up whatever. He went out without a mask. Therefore, he intended to do this. That's all they need. And that will be enough. It's clear because he doesn't want to wear the mask that he wants to spread people. Like, right? I mean, it's obvious to see how they'd make that argument. So all they're saying is if you go out and sneeze and cough and spit and try to infect people, you can literally put in prison. All this is going to end up being is anybody who doesn't go along with the narrative. And you accidentally sneeze one time, you're arrested. Right? You may think that sounds silly, but that's not silly, especially with what we've already seen happening in Australia. Listen to what they're saying.
Welcoming tougher penalties for unvaccinated customers who target hospitality staff.
Anyone that is
who target hospitality staff. Maybe there are people that are let's just say I'm sure it's absolutely true that there are people that are intentionally coughing on whatever. But that will also be taken subjectively for people that didn't do it on purpose.
Is spitting, coughing, or sneezing, or threatens to do so, they can be issued with an infringement notice.
Finally, there is consequences, and we get a little bit more protection for our staff.
From December 17, when the vaccine mandate takes effect, fines will range from $1,300 to more than $13,000 for 6 months behind bars.
Police will be patrolling and conducting compliance checks.
Wow, and conducting compliance checks. That's what she said right there. That's called freedom in Clown World 1984, right? I mean, this is just unbelievable. Threatens to. So you can be sitting in this in a restaurant and say and say I'm going to spit on you, and you could literally go to jail for that. Yeah, does that sound like free speech? Doesn't matter. Nothing is sacred, and it never was, guys. That's the illusion. They use these things as a means to an end. This is the future that we warned you about, that's already happening, being built around you. The digital gulag that James Corbett told you is coming. And we're going to keep screaming about it until people start doing something about it. Because right now, I believe strongly that all of you out there know this is happening, but a huge portion of you believe you're still the minority, and you're wrong. Now here, last two parts to finish on. This is from, let's see where we are, 128. Well, I guess it's not that much shorter than usual. I'll probably end up rattling this off until 2 hours and it will be an exactly normal show. But this is an important discussion that was just had between Joe Rogan and Dr. Peter McCullough. Now, I argued when I put this tweet out that if this conversation is had, which it was, this will shift things because Peter McCullough will not mince his words, and he didn't. Now, I'm going to go through this more extensively. In fact, I'm going to try to wait for the full video, which, you know, the Spotify and the way it works, it's not as there's a lot of clips that have already come out. We're going to show you some of those clips. And to be quite honest, the conversation is outstanding. And Peter McCullough is very, very on it. But 99% of what they talk about, you've heard on my show already. Not to say that you shouldn't listen to it. Absolutely take the time to listen to this. Because this is going to break through to the average person, to some of them. Those that have already decided that Joe Rogan is an ivermectin horse-paced maniac, they will never look at this. Doesn't matter how obviously verified it is. But this is important because it will reach more people. And as I said now that it is out there, both on Spotify and YouTube and elsewhere, because here that's where this clip is. I said, if this isn't removed, and I'll play it for you next, by YouTube, it's clear to me, at least, that this is being allowed to be discussed now. There's no valid reason why this, because you'll listen to what he says, you'll know exactly what I mean. It's everything we're being censored for. And if it's allowed, then there's a shift happening, and they're going to allow this for some reason. And I said, we should very seriously consider why that would be. But either way, important stuff they discuss here that might reach the average person. And to be quite honest, this, you know, unless this is part of some grander plan, which is always a possibility, continues to bolster my perception that Joe Rogan is just a guy doing what he thinks is right, but not real. Like, you know, he just seems much more serious in this interview. Like, he clearly knows how important this is. I could be wrong. I'm wrong. I mean, as I jokingly pointed out the other day, I remember when I first saw Dr. Fauci, I think my opinion was that he seems like just an average guy doing what I think, same thing. Clearly, that's not right. So the point is people, especially sociopaths, are really good at pretending to be a good person. Don't forget that. In fact, scientific research historically has shown that people that are sociopathic are actually some of the best in regard to emulating your emotions. They learn how to look like you act, even though you're doing it reactively. Interesting, right? No. The point being is that I don't think he would have had this conversation if this wasn't, I mean, he knew that they would try to censor him. And if, as I understand it, he even sort of threatened that if you guys remove this from Spotify, then I'm going to pull out. That certainly, I mean, it seems like there's a shift happening. So let's watch these clips and we can go forward and talk about it. Oh, and you know what? While I was playing, I'm going to grab the interview Taylor Hudak did with Dr. Peter McCullough way months ago. And then she's got some great interviews coming up, by the way. All right. So let's go to this real quick. Here's what I'm playing it from. This is the 4-minute clip. So just some random account with only 1,000 subscribers just kind of pulled this one part and put it out there. Here looks like a part two, but let's just play the first one for you.
So in your opinion, if your protocol had been established and distributed worldwide, if people had recognized that this is a way to deal with early treatment, you think that the overall number of COVID deaths would have been significantly reduced?
I testified in the U.S. Senate November 19th, 2020. I told Americans under oath that 50% of the lives at that time could have been saved. We were at about 250,000 deaths.
Now, what's important to think about right there is that, you know, under oath, that clearly, I mean, that's, you have to understand that he could be put in jail for that if he lied. Whether or not under oath, to be quite honest, lying in front of Congress, whether or not under oath, is considered a crime. But that just shows you that at the very least, if you think he's lying, then he's going to great lengths to do so. Now, for those that are going to argue, you're right to consider this, that this is promoting the idea that this is all dangerous. I don't, you know, you could look at this multiple angles. A lot of these people in this position, like a Dr. McCullough, Dr. Malone, you know, they're realizing in a rapid pace that there's more to what they call conspiracy theory than they previously thought, right? But that doesn't mean that every single part of this they're fully accepting or even open to hearing. But regardless, I think pretty clearly he's argued in general that the PCR test is an illusion, or at least that it can be used with high false positives and so on. So when he talks about the deaths and everything else, just take that with a grain of salt and get to the point of what he's talking about, which is that they knowingly didn't use what could have helped people. Now, even if you, again, within that, believe that that challenges what you believe, let's say, with terrain theory, understand that this, within the narrative, arguing from within the narrative, is aggressively challenging what they're saying. And yes, I do get the point that keeping within that argument could, to a degree, justify the argument that we're dealing with something that maybe we're not. But one thing at a time, right? This is such a big conversation. But listen to what he's talking about in regard to the ivermectin conversation and the treatment. And then consider the remdesivir point that we keep bringing up.
Based on what I knew, I then testified on March 10th, 2021 in the Texas Senate, sworn testimony. I upped that to 85% of the deaths could have been avoided. We know that because we carried out studies. We did one with Proctor here in Dallas-Fort Worth, where we demonstrated that even the early primordial protocols before the monoclonal antibodies, when we use drugs in combination, were associated with 85% reductions in hospitalizations and deaths compared to fair comparator groups. For death, we use the Tri-County Area and DFW averages age-adjusted. And for hospitalization, we use the Cleveland Clinic calculator, which is a very precise estimate of the risk of hospitalization.
Now, here's an important point to make that even clearer. What he's saying right there in regard to the – hold on, I just lost it.
5% of the deaths could
have. Right. So the 85% discussion, right? So, okay, if you take that first, you can argue that saying that that 200,000 number was accurate would suggest that that many people actually died from COVID. But I think he's talked about and knows, and we've talked about as well, that that's very clearly not accurate. Whatever the number is, it's verifiable that it's not accurate. Because they're using all sorts of different variants, liberal with the number, 28 days and a positive test and so on. Right, we've seen that. So taking at face value, that number, he's arguing it could have reduced by 85%. But he goes on to say the study is saying that the use of these things he's talking about had an 85% reduction. So I think he's just applying that to the number, not necessarily arguing that that is how many people died. Right? These are different nuances to these conversations that people take at face value. Right? But that's at least the point being, that's what I would argue. Right? That ultimately, these numbers are undefined, and it could be, and I guarantee it's far, far less. Nonetheless, using this on those that would have gotten sick, if you believe that's happening, would have reduced it, and they chose not to. Okay, I'm going to let it play out.
Been avoided. We know that because we carried out studies. We did one with Proctor here in Dallas-Fort Worth, where we demonstrated that even the early primordial protocols before the monoclonal antibodies, when we use drugs in combination, were associated with 85% reductions in hospitalizations and deaths compared to fair comparator groups. In for death, we use the Tri-County Area and DFW averages age-adjusted. And for hospitalization, we use the Cleveland Clinic Calculator, which is a very precise estimate of the risk of hospitalization. Then simultaneously, Derwand and Zelenko showed that from our own New York data, and then Didier Rialt showed it from Marseille, France. So we have three different areas showing early multi-drug therapy as an outpatient works substantially. And we've had a giant loss of life, a giant number, millions and millions of unnecessary hospitalizations. And it seemed to me, and I've told Tucker Carlson and many others, it seems to me early on there was an intentional, very comprehensive suppression of early treatment in order to promote fear, suffering, isolation, hospitalization, and death. And it seemed to be completely organized and intentional in order to create acceptance for, and then promote mass vaccination.
So you believe this is a premeditated thing that they were doing. So they realized that in order to get people enthusiastic about taking this vaccine, the best way to do that was to not have a protocol for treatment.
It's not just my idea now. It's completely laid out by the book by Dr. Pam Popper,
right,
the book recently published by Peter Bregan, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. I wrote one of the introductions. Dr. Lee Vliet and Dr. Vladimir Lysenko wrote the other introductions. These books are basically nonfiction. They have 1,000 citations in the Bregan book showing how it was coordinated and planned. Now Bobby Kennedy has his book out, The Real Anthony Fauci. I'm the most mentioned physician in that book. I can tell you that if you want to find the evidence that Moderna was working on the vaccine before the virus ever emanated out of the lab, if you wanted to find the collusions and the operations between the Gates Foundation.
Now, there's a good point right there. Sorry, I was going to play it out. But, you know, he references the same point that I just made right there as well. That's an important point. But the whole, like, Glenn Beck and Tucker, like, they discovered the 2019, you know, it's kind of a misrepresentation of the facts. McCullough has been saying this, as I have, long before they were breaking news on Tucker Carlson's show with Glenn Beck. The point is that they very clearly were working on an iteration of these vaccines long before the COVID-19 thing exploded. Now, they argue they just adapted what they were working on to the new thing that was happening. But there's evidence to show very clearly that this is there was a lot of more foreknowledge and planning involved there. Whether you believe that's because it was prepped from before or that they knew it was there longer before they told us, either way. I just want to make that clear that I can't stand how the mainstream, both Fox and CNN and everybody, Tucker included, will grab these things. It happens in the independent media. It's happening just today. I made a comment on, you know, we'll grab these things and make an argument as if it's brand new without really pointing back to where it came from. But it's not the point about credit. The point is those people can then use that argument to direct people who would have otherwise been on the right path back into a negative argument. Right? Because it seems like they're on the right path. Oh my God, look at Glenn Beck and Tucker calling this out. And oh my God, it's breaking news. And then you dive into that. And then they circumvent you right back into the mainstream talking points, like everybody like that's doing. That's why that's important. Even if it's not intentional, you may be out there thinking you do the right thing. The point is that you can't just, you have to be broader about it. And you need to recognize the people that did the research, because they tend to be the ones that have the full picture, right? And not just standing on other people's shoulders and yelling about things that they don't fully understand, right? That's what mainstream media is, guys. But Dr. McCullough, God, just say, oh, I'm going to let it play. I'm going to grab that interview. I forgot to do that.
Foundation and Gavi and Seppi, and I'm the most mentioned physician in that book. I can tell you that if you want to find the evidence that Moderna was working on the vaccine before the virus ever emanated out of the lab, if you wanted to find the collusions and the operations between the Gates Foundation and Gavi and Seppi and Pfizer and Moderna and the vaccine manufacturers and the Wuhan lab and the National Institutes of Health and Ralph Baric and University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and how all this was organized. If you want to see the Johns Hopkins planning seminar,
right,
called the SPARS pandemic in 2017, where they had a symposium, people showed up, they wrote up their symposium findings, they published this. It says it's going to be a coronavirus. It's going to be related to MERS and SARS. It's going to come over here to the United States. It's going to shut down cities and frighten people. There's going to be confusion regarding a drug, hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. And we're going to utilize all that in order to railroad the population into mass vaccination. It's laid out in the Johns Hopkins SPARS pandemic training seminar. The only thing they got wrong was the year. They said it was going to be 2025. Instead, it landed a few years early.
Now, I slightly disagree with, I mean, it very likely could be. We're all just guessing based on what we're looking at. But Derek covered this back on November 19th, 2020. The SPARS pandemic of 2025. And then don't forget, InfoWars broke the story on this discussion like 8 months later. SPARS pandemic documentation. And everybody was, oh my God, it's a big story. Derek was on this way before that, which I almost promise you is where they found that. But echo chambers and vaccine opposition. The point here is that this is something that was laid out in 2017 by Johns Hopkins and projected it out to 2025. Now, Derek and I both kind of feel like this is the next thing. Right, this is what seems like is the plan for the future, but it very clearly does outline, like all the rest of them do, exactly how this went. I still feel Event 201 was far, far more exactly in line with how this goes. This seems to paint the picture of the normal going forward. Either way, I 100% agree with Dr. McCullough and everything he's talking about there. It's obvious that this is planned, that there's foreknowledge. Here's the interview. Dr. Peter McCullough, COVID vaccine agenda and the rush to suppress alternative treatments. Same conversation back on July 8th, 2021 with Taylor Hudak. Great clip, important stuff. Now I'm going to play some of this, I think. This is a longer clip, but let's play this one as well, and we'll see if there's anything we want to stick. Two more clips I think I want to play in regard to this interview. Let's see. There we go.
Joe Rogan Podcast, check it out!
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Now we're
train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
Now we're going to be censored for sure.
My concern is that corporations, their goal is to continually make more money. Every year they'd like to make more money than the last. This year for the pharmaceutical companies, it's been an insanely profitable year because of the vaccines.
Right. Right. And don't forget, we just talked about that. And I mean, he's right in a general sense, right? The entire agenda or the 2 years, but just with Omicron, just the hype of the possible danger, which is clearly not real, $10 billion moved into the hands of wealthy people in Moderna and Pfizer. How do they not recognize? I mean, that's obvious. And now we're going, oh, the fourth shot, the fifth shot. Clearly, there's at least a level of a profit motive in regard to like the company levels. I don't think this is all about profit, but that shows you there's a level of it where just the word, the concern, the hype, $10 billion changes hands.
I have a real concern. I wonder if you share this concern that they're going to try to continue to make the same amount of money. And the best way to do that is to continue to encourage people to be vaccinated and to create new vaccines, even if they're not necessary,
right?
The right thing to do.
If it's about making money, I'd almost prefer the vaccines get full FDA approval. You know, none of the vaccines are FDA approved.
Right.
Even Pfizer's not FDA approved. That was a false talking point. Pfizer has a continuation of the EUA. BioNTech, which is not in the United States, got a biological licensing agreement. That still means they have to do a lot to get approved. They have to actually have a approved package insert. They have to commit to post-marketing studies on myocarditis. They have to give safety warnings on pregnancy. They're not there yet. So no product is approved in the United States. They're all emergency use authorized. Everybody needs to know that. Another false talking point, that Pfizer was approved on August 23rd, went all the way up to the President of the United States. Since when in history do we have false talking points issued out of FDA meetings that go up to the President of the United States?
Right, exactly. Now, that's important to take away from that, because we've talked about this as well, but there's a lot more depth in that, right? This is the BLA we read right from that document. So remember, the steps he's discussing, though, are things that they're supposed to be doing right now. So that's why they argue that this is done, right? But just like we said from the beginning, the FDA did approve it. They said that, but that doesn't mean that it was valid, that it was legal, that it was even appropriate. It's saying the same thing. Right. So it's a little bit of I would say a little misleading to say it didn't happen, because they did do it. Right. The FDA is just a corrupt organization. They can FDA approve whatever they want. It doesn't mean that it's valid or that it's legal or that they even did their research. Right. You see what I mean? So I agree with him completely with what he just said, but they did say they did it. They're just a corrupt organization. Right. So the point is, they didn't go through the valid process to do what they claim they usually do, or what that would mean. Now, on top of that, what he just explained is exactly why they're not using it, right? Because it's not technically there. They're just dragging their feet and continuing to push the emergency authorized version. What they're lying about is pretending that they're making that in the background while getting rid of the emergency authorized product. No, What he just told you is very clear. They're still making the emergency authorized product and pushing that out under a guise that it's been approved. It's exactly what we said in the beginning, exactly what RFK Jr. argued. I mean, this is very clear. And there's indemnity they have with the emergency authorization versus the normal one if that ever came around. That's what's happening. They are not held accountable.
So they're not approved. Listen, everybody's entitled to make some money. What seems unfair about this? What seems unfair about this is the government paid for the development costs. The government pre-purchased the products,
wow,
even before they knew it was going to work or not work. And we know that with a new pharmaceutical company, a new product that was developed by a pharmaceutical company, whether it's a new company or existing company, we know a benchmark for a blockbuster drug would be $1 billion of sales in its first year. That's a benchmark. And typically half of that billion is spent on the sales force. There's a investment of billions of dollars in R&D. Do you know with the vaccines that Pfizer in its first year hit $33
billion? Wow.
And now I think next year, $36 billion. No development costs. The government, no sales force because they don't have to sell the vaccine.
Wow.
They are just the suppliers to the government program.
Think about that. That's a really big point. There no sales force, arguably no cost at all. I wonder if they're even having to pay for the advertising. That's pure, massive, monumental profit into the hands of a isolated, condensed few, all driving towards the same agenda. They all support the agenda that's happening around this. That's alarming. In every possible way, on top of all the other alarming points we keep seeing.
Is that a dangerous relationship?
What's dangerous is not fair balance. If we had FDA-approved products, you see them on TV. When's the last time you saw a drug commercial? Let's say you have a drug that's for psoriasis. Oh, my psoriasis is cleared up. Remember the people diving in a pool and they don't have any psoriasis? They have beautiful skin, they're happy, and they're dancing. Okay. You take a psoriasis drug, Joe. It says, warning, may cause tuberculosis. Get a TB test, warning. There's fair balance. That's the U.S. Drug and Cosmetic Act. That's the Lanman Act. We actually have the Truth in Advertising Act. There must be fair balance. Every product has a risk and a benefit. Every product has a risk and benefit. We can never propose a product to anybody in the United States without fair balance. You mentioned myocarditis. And I have to tell you, since you had him on the show, and since we're both graduates of the University of Michigan, which, by the way, is, you know, I think it's one of the better places in the United States. He went to medical school there. I went to graduate school there. I went to UT Southwestern. I finished top of my class. I'm Alpha Omega Alpha. You know, the doctors who are in the NOAA how to treat COVID-19, we're no chump change. I went to the University of Washington in Seattle, top medicine residency program in the United States. I'm the most published person in my field in world history. I have 51 publications in COVID-19. I have U.S. Senate testimony. A judge just relied on my testimony to overturn the entire mandates for the whole country. I'm telling you, when I had an interview with Tucker Carlson, he started getting worked up. He looked at the monitor. He goes, if you don't know who this doctor is, why don't you look at him? He goes, he has authority. And he's right. I do have authority, Joe. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because what's going on here is that we have a situation where we have people in positions of authority. The person you had on here in a position of authority was Sanjay Gupta. And I'm going to pick on him a little bit.
Good.
Because Sanjay Gupta came on Sesame Street, and I want to show the graphic if I don't have it. He came on Sesame Street, and what he did is with another CNN correspondent, he was actually seducing children into taking the vaccine.
Yeah, I saw that. It's very disturbing.
Okay, seducing. I am telling you, no good doctor would do that because there must be risks and benefits. Did he tell the kids and the parents there's FDA warnings that this can cause heart inflammation?
Right.
Did the other CNN correspondent, who's a mother, did she show an ounce of concern? What Scott Atlas uses in his book, Joe's, the term he uses is off the rails. We're off the rails. People in positions of authority are doing bad things.
I've been saying that off the rails from the very beginning, right? I mean, that's exactly how it feels. This is absolutely off the rails. We're on a different vehicle at this point. Like, it is completely off the rails. It doesn't make any sense, and that's what's so staggering. Like, we can see how obvious. Somebody's saying, wow. Oh, no. Is it really? Well, it looks like it's still working to me. The stream, did we lose the stream? Oh, it looks like they took down the YouTube. Yeah. That's right. Well, here's your lesson, guys. That's why you shouldn't be watching on YouTube. I love that they took it down in real time. That is fantastic. Let me see real quick. No, it doesn't look like it. Oh, it is. I love it. I love it. That is so funny. Here, check this out. It still shows that it's live. Here we go. But here is what it looks like now. Stream unavailable. That's a weird... I've never even seen that one. Stream suspended for policy violations. When's the last time you saw it say stream as opposed to channel or video? I love pirate streams. Just while we're talking about it, guys, don't forget... is called T-Lab Pirate Streams. And we don't do this because we want to support YouTube. It's because we want to fight against their censorship and want people that are on that platform to be able to see what's going on. We want them to see what they're trying to hide from you. So if you're out there and you have a YouTube channel that you don't care if it gets censored or removed, send me your reach out at ryan@thelastamericanvagabond.com. Put pirate streaming in the subject line and let give me your login information, your username and login, and we'll put it in the list and we'll get to you when the time comes. I've got 50 plus people that are just waiting in line to be the next YouTube pirate channel. And I promise you that drives them crazy. Every time they remove a video in the appeal, I put, see you on the next T-Lab pirate stream tonight. It's just, I promise you that there's somebody aware what can they do? They're going to find a way to stop it. I promise you that. But anyway, it's just hilarious to me that that's happening. But yes, and the point being is, if you just lost it, well, I guess the reality would, you wouldn't be hearing this if you just lost it on YouTube, but tell them, share on Twitter, go to SuperU, go to Odyssey, go to anywhere else that's working. Back to the point. Oh, here, go back to the video, actually.
Trying to seduce children into taking a vaccine that has official FDA warnings on it without giving fair balance, that's malfeasance. That's wrongdoing by people in position of authority. There should never be an official on TV that says the vaccines are safe and effective, take them. Listen, they have to be proven. Show us the safety and show us the efficacy and let people make a choice. One cannot conclude that they're safe and effective without showing any data. I would never do that. If you go back to, this is Sanjay Gupta.
Sorry, one quick thing here. I don't almost don't even want to say this because people are probably going to go back to YouTube, but that this is very interesting to me. So it appears that it is working again. We just showed you the stream was down.
And show us the efficacy.
But there it is. It's working. Isn't that interesting? Whatever just happened, I find very fascinating. So they censored the stream in real time for some reason, and then in the same amount of time, they decided, nah, give it back. Maybe they don't like that I'm calling them out and it's embarrassing to them. I don't know. Let's pretend that's the case. Anyway, wasting enough time on YouTube. I just think this is hilarious. Oh, that's the wrong video. Where was it? Right there. There we go. Okay, back to the point.
And the CNN correspondent.
Yeah, I've seen that.
There was no fair balance there. I got nauseated when I saw that.
It's just bizarre that he would do that. I don't understand it.
Well, remember... he parroted a talking point that our head of the National Allergy and Immunology Branch parroted. They said that there was no data for ivermectin. They said it was a horse dewormer. Now, either they knew or they should have known the 63 supportive studies and of the over 30 randomized trials. Hey, that's a court of law.
So things are clearly bad. But they're being made even worse by people who have refused to take the vaccine and instead are swallowing horse paste.
Either you knew or you should have known. A person in a position of authority either knew or should have known. Scott Atlas says they're incompetent. They don't know. That's what he says. Bring him on. He'll tell you. He thinks they're incompetent. I'm not so sure. It's either they knew or they should have known. Either one of those is good. Either he knows or he should have known. Either one is not good. Which one is it?
Right.
Ask him. Ask him. Give him a call. Which one is it? Do you know about the myocarditis risks? Or should you know?
He most certainly knows because I showed it to him on the show.
Exactly. He knows. That means, that means he went back on the show, which he did, and then continued to toe the line. Sanjay Gupta, no matter how nice a guy he looks like, is a liar. He's a willful manipulator who went along with what scientists check. I don't care if you think that he had to. At the end of the day, you're choosing to do the wrong thing for whatever reason. As you were confronted by Joe Rogan on the show and admitted that he was right, and then went right back to lying again. That's more disgusting than even just someone who continues to lie. I mean, I got to be honest. Like that is meek and feeble, cowardly.
I mean, that was a weird moment on the show, in fact, because he was trying to look at the results and spin it the other way.
Right.
This, I would like to think that this is information.
That was smart. That somebody people put their little clip in there.
I agree.
How much does it disturb you that this is being censored? Because on every other platform, this conversation we're having right now would be censored.
Exactly.
Every other online platform. Social media, they would censor this for sure on YouTube. But what you're saying is incredibly important.
Now, just take note. Look, I mean, just like I was saying before, Joe is very clearly serious right now. This is real deal to him. You know, and that's my opinion, obviously. He could be misleading us all. But at the end of the day, you could tell that I think he's accepted the severity of what his job has become. Before, he used to, oh, I'm just a regular guy, and he is, and he owns that. But at the same time, he knows how impactful his show can be, and you got to give him credit for stepping up to the plate and doing this, right? By the way, apparently the YouTube took it down again. That's just hilarious. Make up your damn mind. You guys are schizophrenic and ridiculous, but... And you're also meaningless and don't have any impact anymore, so go away. But Joe Rogan, I mean, you got to give him a shout out here. You really do, because this is some good stuff, and he's right. But on the same point I made before, this is right now on YouTube. Maybe it's because it hasn't gotten enough reach. Let's find out if it stays on Spotify, if it stays on YouTube, I'd be very surprised. And that would reveal a lot to us.
Censorship that has suppressed for 2 years information on safe and effective early treatment, and censorship on vaccine safety has led to large numbers of deaths, hospitalizations, and permanent disability. Joe, there is no bigger public health crisis than the impact of censorship in COVID-19.
Now, you also have to remember that what we're talking about is not just that the lack of early treatment caused that. You combine that with the side effects of the injection. Now, I often wonder why that doesn't come out. Maybe just in that exact point. Maybe he brings it up later. But the point is that is a very obvious point to make. That on top of the lack of early treatment to whatever we say we're dealing with, you then give them an injection which increases their risk of infection, doubles their risk of cardiac event. All of that is peer-reviewed science. Everything I just said. And then on top of that, you have the side effects that come on after that, antibody-dependent enhancement, Bell's palsy, stroke, heart attack, vaccine-induced thrombosis, thrombocytopenia, on and on and on and on and on. Could do an entire show listing off the potential effects of this injection. Now, here is the actual, what the full version that's out right now that's on Spotify. Once we find a full version of the video, please send it my way. Good, it's important to listen to. There's a lot of important stuff on here. Now, there was a point that I was going to make that I think just slipped my mind. Yeah, in any case, what he's referencing there is you know, the early treatment part of it. But just don't forget, you have to take the other parts of that as well. There's a multifaceted illusion happening in front of you. There's a multifaceted cover-up happening in front of you. It's not just one thing or one group or one country. It's obvious how big this is today. But what he's talking about is in regard to the early treatment. So let's focus on that and the main part of what I think is the most obvious. And specifically ivermectin in this point, but I've also seen, and I've said many times, I don't like promoting any big pharma drug whatsoever. I think it should be your choice and you should focus aggressively on the natural side of things. Vitamin D, vitamin C, eating healthy, exercising, that's the real healthy direction. That's the real prophylactic. But on top of that, if you are not exercising, eating terribly, overweight, well, then you're potentially at risk to a lot of different things. So the point is that we've seen a lot of conversation about ivermectin, and I think that's the most obviously suppressed. But on top of that, I've also seen a lot of information that suggests that the combination of hydroxychloroquine and zinc and azithromycin, I think, or azithromycin, I forget the pronunciation there. You know, I've read about these things, and it's clear that there is more than they're showing you. Nonetheless, I don't want to promote those things because I just don't think that's something I agree with. But the one thing to make that point today is what we do see with the peer-reviewed science around the one thing they're most attacking. Not that I necessarily am promoting it all. The point is, the one thing I promote is that it should be your choice. What do you think is best for you, based on the experts and your research and everything else? Now, this is breaking news. As of 5 hours ago, Pfizer's COVID-19 antiviral pill cuts the risk of hospitalization and death. That very risk they keep screaming is super rare and never happens. But now we're going to make a pill that has to be given alongside it that reduces that non-existent risk by 89% in high-risk patients. Ah, okay, so the high-risk patients that you're giving the injection to that then, oh, wait, that was from yesterday. That's right. That was funny. I was remembering that same looking tab from yesterday. It all just bleeds together. But what was that? Was it West something? Yep, look at that. Look at that memory. This is from the last show. Canadian province stops giving boosters to elderly who have COVID in the past due to severe life-threatening effects. And that's the point we just made about the infection. You're previously infected, then you get the injection, and bad things happen, right? That's what the science is showing, what the media is reporting, on and on and on. So in the high-risk group that we're already saying don't need these things, they're going to say, well, now just take this pill alongside this, and it will reduce the thing that we claim isn't happening. This is a clown show. It's ridiculous. But the main point, of course, is that this is the same thing that they're trying to use. Pfizer's new pill does the same thing as ivermectin. Now, it's not exactly the same thing, but read this and watch the video. I go through this extensively with all this peer-reviewed research, the documentation from both sides, and make it very clear that this is what they're trying to do with this pill. And then, on top of that, recognize what Dr. McCullough is telling you, that there is no end to the valid research that shows you, excuse me, that ivermectin, at the very least, has a significantly positive effect in regard to what they tell you is happening. That's what they're saying. I'm not saying I can prove that, but the science says that. My point is simply that their scientific research is saying that this is happening or that it should be used, and all they can do is say horse paste. How do if you look at all of that and walk away thinking we're crazy, I don't know what to do for you. My point is that most people that think horse paste don't even know this exists. And if you told them that, or even if they watched the show, they would think, it must be fake because I don't believe that. Here's what the American Journal of Therapeutics said about ivermectin on, where was the date on this one again? Right there, August, July, 2021. Ivermectin for prevention and treatment of COVID-19, exactly what they claim is literally not supposed to be used for. And this is not just one thing. This is a massive systematic review, meta-analysis, and trial sequential analysis of multiple studies. And it says, moderate certainty evidence finds that large reductions in COVID-19 deaths are possible using ivermectin. Though at the very least, it's not what they're arguing. This is not even the most sound. This one is just simply saying clearly it's possible. So why then drag your feet when the NIH is currently investigating whether it works, as they pretend that it's absolute propaganda, or the WHO still recommends it, that the NIH still recommends it for people coming in from overseas. But Ryan, that's anti-parasitic. Okay, well, let's get into the next articles that make it clear that it has an antiviral use. It says, using ivermectin early in the clinical course may reduce numbers progressing to severe disease. The apparent safety and low cost suggest that ivermectin is likely to have a significant impact on SARS-CoV-2. And you know what they did? They said fake news, censored, liars, horse paste. Here's the next one. This is from August, same time. Ivermectin is SARS-CoV-2 pre-exposure prophylactic method in healthcare workers. Point? In 28 days of follow-up, significant protection of ivermectin preventing the infection from SARS-CoV-2 is observed. Significant. A 74% reduction in risk. There's no denying that. But they do. They just ignore it. And the one that's the most obvious, from Science Direct, from September. A multifaceted drug of Nobel Prize honor distinction with identified efficacy against new global scourge, COVID-19. Now, you could read those through for yourself. I've read this a million times. The bottom line is they find the same point, 74% reduction. This is very, very clear. They've said in all these studies that it finds an antiviral property, but yet the media somehow argues that that's complete fake news. Apparently, they don't know how to trust the science the right way. So childish. But to finish off, I forgot I included this. I just want to say this really quickly. I'm going to actually dive into this deeper. As we can see how much they're really lying about. Let's not forget about one person in the very beginning of all this that we really focused on, that just dropped off the map, dropped off the narrative, even though he was the leading expert in the world on nanotechnology that was made to mimic viruses. I'm not making that up. You can. I don't have the thing pulled up. I'm going to do a larger part on this in the show going forward, but I've done it many times in the past. You can look it up. I mean, let me see if I can even grab it really quickly. Lieber. Now, I probably won't. It's going to be harder because I think it's based on. Oh, here we go. Look at that. I did find it. Look at that. Virus-sized transistors. Imagine being able to signal an immune cell to generate antibodies that would fight bacteria and even cancer. You know, or in the logical reverse of that, signal an immune cell to do bad things to your body, because that's exactly what it could do. That fictional possibility is now a step closer to reality with the development of a biocompatible transistor the size of a virus. Now think about this. Later in this narrative, they held up something the size of, you know, like a pea and said, that's the smallest new thing we made. Liars. As they're making things the size of viruses that can go in your body and are biocompatible. But it says Hyman professor and chemistry Charles Lieber and his colleagues used nanowires to create a transistor so small that it could be used to enter and probe cells without disrupting the intracellular machinery. Isn't that fantastic? That was in 2011. Let that sink in. Now, this is the person, if you have forgotten, who was arrested. Oops, too far ahead. The trial of Charles Lieber is also a test of the China initiative. Now, this is as of today. But remember, he was arrested right in the beginning of this, almost before this even started, because they were caught, or people that they were working with were caught smuggling biomaterial in their sock from Beth Israel Hospital into China. And they argue working with this person or with Charles Lieber, but ultimately that the main point that he was lying about his connections with China. This feels like an entirely hollow argument. Very obvious what he was doing, and it was openly done, and a lot of other scientists were doing the same thing. And the point, and I'm not saying it wasn't necessarily nefarious, but at the end of the day, this person was perfectly shuttled away, like outside of the narrative, right in the beginning. And now suddenly he's being kind of pushed back into it, as it says, a jury will now decide if famed Harvard nanotechnology expert is guilty of concealing his employment with China. Very strange to me. In January of 2020, agents arrived at Harvard University looking for Charles Lieber, a renowned nanotechnology researcher creating virus-sized nanotechnology, who chaired the school's Department of Chemistry and Chemical Biology. Now Lieber is set to go on trial beginning December 14th, today, in federal court in Boston. He has pleaded not guilty, and hundreds of academics have signed letters of support. Now, what if this is just a way to get him out of the conversation? And now they're going to vindicate him. And as if, you know, all this did was get him away. What if all of a sudden he was doing great big research on this topic and somebody brought up the idea about what if this was nanotechnology? And then we all of a sudden find this guy that's tied in with things like Harvard and tap that can tie back to people like Jeffrey Epstein. And we can find connections to this that lead back to what we're all doing today, the eugenics and the Great Reset and all of this. And suddenly we go, why are we making transistor-sized virus mimicking nanotechnology? Well, the perfect way to stop that conversation is to jam this guy into legal processes that don't keep him in the narrative. Just a thought, as he seems to be getting signs of support from the academics. They are calling the prosecutions fundamentally flawed, a witch hunt that misunderstands the open book nature of basic science and that is selectively destroying scientific careers over financial misdeeds and paperwork errors without proof of actual espionage or stolen technology. Sounds like he's going to win this, and it's going to be they overshot it. You think they didn't know that? Unless this is going to be an Epstein thing where the guy weirdly disappears in the middle of all this, it seems like this is couched, like it's meant to be an argument that gets put away, and then he's vindicated, and oh, now it's back to normal, and all it did was ultimately remove him from this. I'm just totally theorizing, guys, but there's something weird about this, and I want us to remember how important this conversation was to the beginning of what was happening. We're going to alter human evolution in 20 years using nanotechnology, they said back in 2002. We have to ask ourselves whether this is part of it. Finally, don't forget that Israel just hosted a cyber pandemic exercise for like the third time during this, simulating a cyber attack on global financial systems with 10 countries. And remember the cyber pandemic they're trying to justify, rationalize. That was 4 days ago they did this, right? Okay, well, suddenly we jump to today. Oh my gosh, check it out. Hackers took down Brazil's health ministry site. deleting all medical passports. Now, this is sort of being framed as people fighting against the whole thing, right? And hackers fighting against the medical tyranny. And maybe that's what happened. Maybe it is. And that would be a good thing, in my opinion, not to promote what would be arguably criminal activity. If you believe that's the, you know, not to say that there's not what they would deem criminal is not sometimes the right thing to do, but regardless, I'm not sure if I buy this as a positive thing. I feel like this is perfectly tapping into what this is meant to look like, right? I don't believe for a second that they just deleted all this and that they don't have things elsewhere that they can't just put it right back up. What it says is hackers took down Brazil's government health ministry site, which held all COVID vaccination records, making it impossible to determine who in the country is vaccinated and who is not until they put the site back up, right? I promise you that's not just held on one location, but nonetheless, it's being pointed as a positive, which it could be, but overall what it's going to be done, used as, is a reason to continue to tighten down their control on the internet, on everything. Anonymity. I mean, the only reason I'm able to do pirate streams is because of anonymity. So the moment they remove that, all that stops. I think that's what this might be. This might be a ploy to get us to go, oh no, that's, thank God Israel did this. Now also ask yourself how interesting it is that 4 days after they do this, suddenly we see things like this happen, which is exactly what's happened every time. Almost exactly. Even less day, maybe 1 or 2 days later. If we can't see by now that we're being played like a fiddle right into the hands of their new agenda, then you're not paying attention. Now, I don't believe that we're being played into that because we don't know what's happening. We're being played into that because a lot of us haven't come to the realization that we are the majority. We need to recognize that. And until we do, we are going to continue to be played. And I've said this in every speech I've given, including in very partisan locations. We will not achieve anything unless we can cross these illusory party lines. We need to recognize that it's not partisan. There are people on all sides of this illusion that are very aware this is not okay. We need to reach out to these people, cross these party lines. And that's the same point about not, you know, by bringing in these people. Instead of just standing on people's research and pointing and not pointing back, we need to bring everybody together. We need to be an obvious majority of people that are very aware there's a problem happening, standing in unison against this, even if we have political differences. That's become almost impossible today, and that's intentional. We need to be able to get past that. Now, you guys in this chat, the crowd, the audience on this channel are very aware of that. And it's why I continue to say that you guys are some of the best people out there in regard to being objective, open-minded. Now, I'm sure a lot of people say that about their audiences, but people that come in this chat will say the same thing. It's obvious that people are here for each other. Or someone like Melanie, the nurse I had on the show, will come on the show and have just a waterfall of people reaching out from 30 different countries saying, hey, how can we support you? What can we do for you? Those are good people. And that's what we're creating here. That's what we're cultivating. The goodness in all of us that they've shut down and hidden, stepped on, and made us believe isn't actually there. You know it's there. You're fighting for it. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. And avoid this future. Stay vigilant.
Excuse me. Gonna need to see your proof of vaccination. Oh. You know we got the new mandate going on.
Right, sorry. I have the app.
Oh, Moderna, huh? Heard that one knocks you on your ass. I got the Pfizer.
Oh, you're a Pfizer guy. I hear Moderna's better, but not going to judge. You know, the new normal.
Have a good one.
Have a good one.
A vaccine passport? Yeah, but I need proof of at least 10 booster shots. Where's the... Okay, AIDS vaccine passport. I'm going to need to see an allergy test. Lyme disease, chickenpox, H1N1, rabies tag, H1N2. All right, proof of the herpes vaccine. And what about the herpes booster?
I literally got it like 10 minutes ago.
Let's see it. All right, hand, foot, and mouth disease, H1N5, prostate exam, whooping cough. I'm going to need your Netflix password, HPV.
I actually have HPV.
I need proof to show solidarity to the HPV community. I'm gonna need to see your blockbuster card. Tetanus. Negative test for the Black Plague. Tetanus booster?
I don't have it.
I'll give it to you now. Proof of political party? proof of diversity.
Are you serious?
We already have two white guys in there, okay? That's our limit.
Okay, I'm Jewish.
What do you think this is, 2021? You're gonna have to be way more oppressed than that to get in here. You got like a 23andMe test results?
Yes, yes.
50% Ashkenazi Jew. 0.000027 Native American. Why didn't you just tell me that? You got an anti-racist card? All right, now I just got to check your white guilt score. 9.7. Wow, not bad, man. Just got to scan you for male toxicity. Okay, quick set of questions. Would you have sex with a trans woman?
Yes.
Can men have babies?
Yes.
Do all lives matter?
Yeah, no.
Quote from Broad City to prove you can hang with gay people.
Yes, queen.
I'm sorry?
Yes!
Yeah, that's better. How many statues have you toppled this month?
9.
You support the police?
No.
Are all Trump supporters racist?
Yes.
How many abortions have you paid for?
5.
I'm gonna need to see your punch card. Alright, 4 more and your 10th one's free. How many people have you canceled this month?
18, 19 including my grandmother.
Racist?
No, she still likes Louis C.K.
Even worse. Ever been me too'd?
No.
Me three'd?
No.
Me four'd?
No. Nope.
Me seven? Me 69'd? I need proof of a black friend. Okay, how many pronouns are there?
92,627.
All right, and finally, I need you to recite the full sexuality acronym.
LGBTQIAONMPZ? Greater than sign, less than sign, squiggly mark, a peace sign, at sign, hammer and sickle, poop emoji, and symbol for titanium.
All right, just put your mask on and show them your receipt.
You know, I actually lost the receipt, so...
How are we supposed to give you your laundry if you don't have the receipt?